This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. A lovely Tuesday morning, the 5th of September. It's exciting times. As the seasons change and as sands through the hourglass, so are the days of our lives. Lots to get to today. CFL, Bombers, crazy Labor Day weekend, and of course the Banjo Bowl on the horizon. The Young Stars Tournament goes this weekend in Penticton, and we will have all the games for you live right here on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. So we'll get into that. Major League Baseball is ramping up. It is September. The leaves are turning. The boys of summer become, hopefully, stars in October. We'll touch on that, and we'll get an hour of your phone calls. Laura Armstrong's going to join us from the Toronto Star to talk Toronto Blue Jays. Marshall Ferguson, the Tiger Cats play-by-play man and CFL guru, is going to join us to talk about that first Tiger Cats win of the season and the rest of the CFL. And the NFL kicks off this Thursday with the New England Patriots, who made a trade. What does that mean for the quarterback depth and the future of both Tom Brady and what's his name? Jimmy Garoppolo. And Jason Cole from the Bleacher Report will talk NFL with us. An hour of your phone calls as well. Lots to get to. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki with you. Gentlemen, happy fall, and how was the weekend?
I can't let the start of this whole thing go there. Did you kind of quote Days of Our Lives? That's got to be a finable offense.
Why? Hope changed my life. Hope changed a young lad's dreams in junior high. Wow. Every summer afternoon. And Holy Bo smackers. Is a real loser, man.
The weekend was good, offense, man. Bo. Weekend was good. Some of the, the Bomber game was, I suppose, entertaining, kind of fun, even though the Bombers lost. But you could kind of just, we'll get into that more as the days coming. Of course, the old injury stuff and going down and all the rest of it, but. Yeah, the weekend's nice here, and get this whole thing going for the Banjo Bowl and try and seek some revenge here for the Bombers.
Yeah, it was good until Sunday. That's about it. Sunday just kind of not even Sunday, just the first quarter.
Your hair is spectacular today, Wix.
It's a little rough. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, I feel like putting it on Twitter.
Did you put it on Twitter?
I feel like I should. It's just ridiculous. Yeah, ridiculously wonderful.
I'm gonna need to take a bathroom break in about 10 minutes here just to get things back. I feel out of it right now. I'm not liking it.
It's
I'm not
thick good. And luxurious.
Yes, absolutely.
It is definitely thick.
Yeah. However, it looks a little slightly unmanageable today. Let's move on. Well, your initial thoughts of the Banjo Bowl, and we're going to hear from the Bombers at the bottom of the hour, talk about the game extensively, and open the Boss Pizza fan line at 9 to get your thoughts on it. But your overall impressions of the 38-24 loss, dropping the Bombers' record to 7-3 on Sunday.
You just can't allow, for the four big plays they allowed in the first half defensively, two receiving plays over 50 yards, a run play of 48 yards, and a punt return of 63 yards. You can't allow that and survive, and especially with the emotional sort of situation that exists there at Mosaic for this game. And they got buried in a hurry, and that was about it. And they made a valiant effort to try and come back and make it close again, but it's important to note when they did that, Saskatchewan goes down, bam, another touchdown just to create that separation. So they just got it handed to them, got it stuck to them, and I think the primary thing to watch this week is going to be the Saskatchewan Roughriders. For basically the entirety of that game, rushed three. That's it on that D-line, just three. Just sort of contained and never really – like Matt Nichols had plenty of time. And he saw him looking down the field, but that extra man of coverage, and with what is already a very stout secondary – that gives up the fewest percentage completion against and the second lowest quarterback ranking against. So they're good back there. And he had all kinds of time and just couldn't see anything that he thought was inviting enough to send the ball down the field and it'd be a check down. It was just happened the whole game long and really kept the Bombers off kilter on offense. I'm really intrigued this week to see what will be the counter and response to that from Paul Appelisa and Matt Nichols. You would expect Saskatchewan, if you do something in a back-to-back situation in the first game and it works, you typically that's how you arrive to the second game. So the Bombers have got to counter that somehow and in some way get the ball down the field and to their first and second option receivers in this game, or else they're going to be in a bunch of trouble.
Yeah, when the kicker is generally the only player that played good, the game's not going to end well for your team. And that's kind of like there just wasn't a lot of guys that had solid game. I mean, Andrew Harris was Andrew Harris and that sort of thing. But you have to kind of think pretty hard about who played solid for the Bombers in the game. It was just a bad game all around. And it was ugly essentially from the get-go. And it didn't get much better moving forward. And while the offense had its faults, there's no doubt about that. The Riders have a very good defense, though. So you have to give them a ton of credit for what they were able to do. But I'm getting pretty sick and tired of watching this defense. I know the front four didn't get, I think, any pressure realistically all game long. And usually they've been pretty solid all season. So maybe it was just an off game for them. I'm not sure. But the secondary is just atrocious. It's just like I don't know how you can have any faith in what's going on back there. Taylor Loeffler at least is playing hurt, and you kind of saw him come out of the game at the end. But they got to figure out that other half of the field opposite Heath and Randall. They have to, because the Bombers are going to make the playoffs, and they still can make the playoffs with how their defense is. But they're not going to be a real threat, and it might come down to Kyle Walters having to make a move and bringing in some help here. Because right now, the guys they have, whether it's scheme or talent, they're not getting it done. And it's real frustrating to watch Kevin Glenn back there and just playing pitch and catch with his receivers, and the closest DB is 5 yards away. It happens all the time, but all game long, there's just nobody anywhere near these guys. And you're basically hoping for a drop to try and stall what the Riders are doing offensively.
261 yards Kevin Glenn had after the first half.
And Kevin Glenn, 26 of 36, 386 yards total, 3 TDs and no picks. And the 53-yarder Troy mentioned. Matt Nichols, 35 of 47, 74.5%, 364 yards, 2 TDs, 2 picks. And his longest was 31. A lot has been said about Matt Nichols' long ball, and I understand why, but to me, and I don't like to harp on a guy who's a very good player, but Darvin Adams didn't help him out on that one play again.
And that's the whole thing. Like, Matt Nichols could have Mike Riley'd it and send the ball down the field in this game in 50-50 situations, but the Winnipeg Blue Bombers do not have a Darius Bowman, an S.J. Green, a Manny Arsenal, a Daron Carter. Darvin Adams is upcoming and good, but he's not a real physical guy. And I'm not sure that he's big enough to be that 50-50 guy if the Bombers want to put that sort of play into place. There's no question Mike Riley would have sent 4 or 5 balls down the field, go get it, to a Darius Bowman. You just see it all the time. That's sort of what the Edmonton does. Matt Nichols is also emphasizing, or mostly emphasizing, ball security. So that's kind of not in the realm of the offense of Paul Appelisa to risk a play like that. But they don't have that stud big outside guy to go up and get those balls, and it ended up paralyzing the offense.
To me, I thought where they lost the game was obviously the big plays, but on the D line, they didn't get anywhere near Kevin Glenn, and I'm wondering if you're down on the secondary because they just had too much time to cover because there was no pressure, or is it the secondary overall?
Now, let me interject here. In that first half, over 50% of the plays, the Bombers sent blitz. So it wasn't like Richie Hall. They weren't laying back. Yeah. They were trying to get there. They just couldn't get there.
Yeah, the Riders' whole line was real good. You know, and it wasn't just kind of a one player. It was the 5-man unit, and it was basically just a brick wall trying to get through. I get what you're saying. But we've seen this team get pressure and the secondary still get torched. Like, it's been a season-long thing. And I don't know. I don't think it's a talent issue with some of those guys. Like, because Kevin Fogg last year was pretty solid in his rookie year. they're like, I don't know what the scheme is or anything like that, or what they're asking their DBs to do specifically. But there's just the first one, the big one to Roosevelt, is a clear breakdown, and that's between Heath and Randall too, who are generally as solid as it gets. But other than that, you have guys. I mean, Daron Carter made the one-handed catch, which is outstanding. There's nobody within 10 yards of him when he makes the catch, and he's one or number two in terms of their passing options. And there's nobody even
the middle,
near him.
Not that far, like right there, right? Just underneath everybody.
It's just way too much separation on the little plays. Like when you run a five-yard slant or a cross across the middle, I mean, I don't know why you're lining up 5-10 yards away from the receiver and basically just offering him the first down marker. Like, it's just, it's been going on all season long. It looked like it might have been improving, but Sunday was a real, real big step back for the secondary.
That's one thing, Kevin Glenn, like whatever you want to say about him, the one thing for sure that he's got as an asset is he's real smart, and there's not many, if any, quarterbacks out there that can read a defense as well as Kevin Glenn. So on those blitzes, sending the blitz, Kevin Glenn reads that, no question, before the play, and a couple steps, bam, delivers the ball. That's the one. That's kind of the forte of Kevin Glenn.
This is the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Choth, Troy Wessler, Brandon Rewicki breaking down the Labor Day Classic. We'll hear from some of the Bombers at the bottom of the hour, and of course take your phone calls at 9 o'clock on the Boss Pizza fan line for your thoughts on the Labor Day Classic. So where does this loss leave you concerning the Bombers? They're 7-3. They're second in the West after Edmonton lost in Calgary at 7-3. They have 14 points. Calgary is 8-1-1, 17 points. Saskatchewan is now 5-4. Where does this leave the Bombers in your mind? Has anything changed? Has anything grown a concern? Are you still full of confidence and they just got outplayed? Where do you sit with this?
That's a Jim Dandy of a question, man. I when they were 7-2, there was like that was it was a it's a great record, but I don't know that if you close your eyes and imagine a 7-2 team, I don't know that the Bombers sort of encompass that here, and not on not offense, but more defensively, right? So you just there is an immense amount of pressure on Saturday for a major response to this team, and we discussed it coming into this week, where Wicks and I thought anyway, the Bombers going to Regina, lose, come home and win, but the amount of pressure on the boys to win this one against a team in Saskatchewan that over its three-game winning streak now has averaged 44 points and is only allowing 17 against, like, boy, there's an immense amount of pressure. And if you come out at home and stumble a little bit early on here and lose that emotion of the crowd, whew, like this, it's not a must-win, but if you want to stay in the upper half of the West and keep Saskatchewan at bay, and Edmonton's going to get healthy at some point in time, it's just they're in that jumbled mess of everything below Calgary, and certainly Calgary starting to separate from the pack. But the whole Winnipeg, Edmonton, Saskatchewan thing is going to be something to watch over the remaining games of this season. Where am I with them? I don't know, because it's just too muddy in the middle of the West.
Yeah, this is something we haven't talked about much, but it's looking like you're kind of almost looking at two different leagues here, where the Stamps are in a class of their own, and maybe you're just playing for second place if you're all the other teams right now. But if you're talking about the Edmonton, Saskatchewan Bombers, middle of the West there, I don't know, pick your team. Like, I know Edmonton's real banged up right now, and once they get healthy, it'll be different, but Saskatchewan's morphing into a scary team.
Yep.
They really are, and they don't have a lot of weaknesses right now, and if Kevin Glenn is playing as well as he is right now, they're every bit as good as basically everyone outside of Calgary, and the Bombers, I still think they're going to win Saturday. I think they're going to find a way to win and split the series, which would be a pretty big success, I think. But the gap between the Bombers and Saskatchewan has absolutely diminished. And I think they're neck and neck.
To me, it was a game like the Stampeders loss. Like, it's hard to get a read because I just didn't think they played well. If they had played well and lost to Saskatchewan, then I would have a different feeling about this. But I'm with you guys. This Banjo Bowl will tell me a lot more than maybe the Labor Day Classic. And if they bounce back, you know, I still have a lot of confidence in this team. I didn't think they executed well. But if they lose two in a row to Saskatchewan, I will probably feel a little differently about this Bombers roster. We'll let you weigh in at 9 o'clock, and we'll hear from the Bombers at 6:30. Up next, the rest of the CFL and Labor Day weekend on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, and we're continuing to wrap up Labor Day weekend, and we'll take your calls on the Boss Pizza fan line with your thoughts, concerns, and impressions at 9 o'clock on the Boss Pizza fan line. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, 22 minutes past the hour. Supposed to be a nice fall day in the 20s today here in the city of Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Around the CFL, I should start with the Hamilton game, but I'll do the Calgary-Edmonton game because there's probably not much to talk about as there is with the Hamilton game. Calgary beats the Edmonton Eskimos 39-18. Edmonton was never really in it. They're banged up. Calgary coming off that win 23-7, I believe, against the Argos, looked a lot better and put up a ton of points on the Edmonton Eskimos in the Labor Day Battle of Alberta.
Some of the stats that Calgary is compiling right now are gaudy. For them, I believe their home points for and against are 140-something to 20-something allowed in their five home games this year. And now that includes the 60-1 beatdown against Hamilton. But nonetheless, that's still wildly impressive. They are, like Wicks was saying, coming into this week, they were only allowing 18.8 points against per game. That is a touchdown better than the next best in the CFL. They stand all alone like that, and it's really just mind-blowing. And you think of Calgary, and you look at Bo Levi Mitchell and Jerome Messam and all the weapons they've got on offense. The best part about Calgary is what they bring to the field defensively, and they are downright, they're a class all alone. They stand all alone looking down at the rest of the CFL from a high place in the sky. They're just super impressive.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe losing that Grey Cup game was the worst thing that could have happened to the rest of the CFL this season, because you have a team coming in on a mission and ready to prove that last year was the fluke. The title game was the fluke. Hey, look, it might not have mattered either way, but it didn't help. It didn't help that they have a bit of motivation going into the year. I don't know how you beat them. I really don't. I saw maybe every year the Stamps kind of struggle out of the gate a little bit, and then it's basically perfection afterwards. And you look at their numbers in the CFL, and they're top three in damn near every single statistic. They don't turn the ball over, don't give up sacks. They force turnovers like crazy. They don't give up points. They score the most points. Good luck. I don't know. It almost kind of feels like it's an inevitable finish to this season.
The other Labor Day Classic went last night, and it took forever, and it reminded me of that Bomber game. I believe it was on a Wednesday night 2 years ago or last year that the storm rolled in and the players had to be removed from the field, and it just happened to be a Wednesday that I believe it was hours before they could resume it. Same thing happened in Hamilton last night. Weather has been wreaking havoc. They had a long delay, but the Hamilton Tiger Cats, under a new head coach June Jones, and with Jeremiah Mazzoli at the helm, get their first win of the season, 24-22 over the Toronto Argonauts in a storm-delayed game. Hamilton is on the board at 1-8 with their new quarterback, who's their old quarterback. The last time the Tiger Cats got a victory, he was behind the helm as well.
I suppose it makes sense that Hamilton would be able to, after that two-hour break or whatever it was, for them to come out and Mazzoli look as hot as he did, and for the old man Ricky Ray to not handle it anywhere near as well, right? Like, that's a long time, man. And for the guys coming back, and Milt Stego saying as they're coming back, given 10 minutes on the field to warm up is kooky, but just an absolute kooky night. And maybe that's what needed to happen here for Hamilton to come out of there with a win. I remember, I was telling the boys this morning, I remember, it was funny, when we were doing the Bomber, Minuk Dencher Bomber Game Day, we talked about this game upcoming, and Chris said, I don't know what it's like to be on an 0-8 team. And I was like, well, I do. Right, yeah. So we were 0-10 at one point in time under the Jeff Reinbold, and I'll never forget when you do get that win, it feels good, but it's not, you know, they're partying pretty good there, and there's almost talking some smack coming out after that win in Hamilton. But I remember the fans came down to the field at the old Canadian Stadium when we won, and we're 1-10 at this point in time. We were 0-10, we won, and the fans carried Jeff Reinbold off the field. And then after the game, there were 300 or 400 people waiting for Coach Reinbold. If you remember the old stadium, and that's sort of where all the office building was, in the back part on the grass in the field, that sort of bled away from or bled off the field. 300 or 400 people, they're chanting his name, and he came out for a curtain call kind of a thing after that as well. And we were 1-10. That's what I thought of the very most after Hamilton finally wins. But Mazzoli looked decent, but there's still a lot of work to do, obviously, in Hamilton.
I think the funny, I mean, I really don't expect them to win more than one game the rest of the way going home, but the funny thing is, they're not that far out of the playoff mix.
Two games out of third.
Like, isn't that so unbelievably absurd that if they string together a couple of wins, they could be in the battle to host a playoff game?
And they're actually like three games out of top spot, right? So that, they're still talking in the locker room. I guarantee you they're talking about that.
So you're saying there's a chance. We'll find out what the Bombers felt after their Labor Day Classic next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and not AutoCorp present the Blue Bus before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season. We're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our not AutoCorp VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you up and five buddies from a starting destination, drive you to the game, and when it's done, we'll take you back to wherever you started. Prize includes six tickets to an upcoming Blue Bomber home game and free transportation to and from. Enter to win at TSN1290.ca. The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki. On TSN 1290, 33 minutes past the opening hour, we'll have your Hockey Nights in Vegas chance to qualify coming up in the next hour. And again, in the 8 o'clock hour, your phone calls on the Boss Pizza fan line starting at 9 a.m. We're going to talk some Major League Baseball, some Jets Young Stars. Mark Stewart, we'll find out if these guys think he gets a job. No contract as of yet. And, of course, get into the NFL and more on the CFL. Right now, we'll get back to the Labor Day Classic, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Of course, taking it on the chin, 38-24 in Regina on Sunday. And they'll host the Banjo Bowl. Sold out at Investors Group Field Saturday afternoon, 2 o'clock. And, of course, the Minook Denture Blue Bomber Game Day returns Saturday at noon with Westwood, Chris Walby, and Mr. Darren Bombing. Gentlemen, lots to be said, and I know you heard a lot about it on the post-game show on the Minook Denture Blue Bomber game day, about the injuries or the faking of injuries by the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Mike O'Shea, the head coach of the Bombers, would not comment on it after the game. And the two in specific happened in the first quarter, 9:56 on the fourth play of a drive. Eddie Steele got crushed by Travis Bond, double team block. Steele goes down near the hash mark. When the camera returns for the next snap, he's on the ground near the hash mark. In the second quarter, 1:58 after the second play of the drive, McKenna Henry appears to be fine, but he is down clutching a hamstring before the next play. Derek Taylor putting those two together. Lee Jones, of course, TSN coverage in Regina, putting those out as well. Well, here's Matt. Mike O'Shea, as I said, wouldn't comment. Here's Matt Nichols on the injury faking by the Riders.
I think everyone's pretty easy to see what was happening.
What are your thoughts on those? I know you spent a lot of time on the post-game show talking about it with Walby and Bombing.
Yeah, Nichols said, hey, if they want to play soccer, let them play soccer. It's not like a soccer thing, right? In soccer, you embellish to try and get a free kick out of it, and that's not the situation here at all. Quote, this is something that has been happening in the CFL forever and ever. In football in general, it happens. If for some reason, the defense wants a delay of some sort, there's a player that goes down. Something that happens all the time if there's a quick score. Something happens that where your defense is going to be on the field again on when you go up for the extra point. One of the O-linemen goes down. It's something that everybody – you have a guy specifically. It's the same guy pretty much all the time who goes down, fakes an injury to give the team a little bit more time. So Bomber fans were really riled up about it, and I understand. Like I said to an ex-teammate after the game, if our coach put that into play and they came into the game knowing they're going to do that, you dress eight D linemen, right? So if one of your D linemen misses three plays, who cares? You got seven other dressed, you rotate them in and no big deal. But if one of our coaches, if you were concerned with the Bombers' cheetah offense that has been so successful, then you stretch the rules as much as you can to take advantage of the situation. That's what, in pro sport, man, that's what you do, whatever you can do to win the game. I tip my hat to Chris Jones for taking advantage of the rule and the situation as it exists. If the CFL wants to change it, you can expect it's going to happen again on Saturday. Right? That cheat offense is so effective for the Bombers. They're going to go to it. Saskatchewan's going to recognize it. Somebody's going to go down. I'm not sure how many times it happened during the course of the game, but it was flagrant and obvious. And if the CFL wants to do something about it, you're going to have to change that the injured player, instead of going and having to leave the game for three plays, has to come out for six or eight or 10, something along those lines. You can't leave it up to the ref to try and guess who's injured and who's not. That's never going to work out. But certainly the CFL can extend the number of plays a player has to sit out for.
Is it cheating?
No, it's not. What, cheating? It's stretch, even, like, what the hell's, anyone that, like, what's cheating? No, this is definitely not cheating. You are stretching the rules out as far as you can to take advantage of situations during games where guys feed their families and pay their mortgages, and all that matters is winning and losing. I have respect for Chris Jones for this. Other coaches have done it. It's been done for decades, just never to the degree maybe that we saw. But when you can neuter maybe the most effective aspect of an opposing offense that has been put up more than 33.7 games in a row, if you could take away one of their most effective traits, that's called good coaching and good game planning.
Is it cheating?
No. Is there a rule against it? If there's no rule, then it's not cheating. And unfortunately, there's no rule for it right now. And look, the Saskatchewan did what they needed to do. You got to slow down the no-hurry offense, or no-huddle offense. So you fake an injury. Is it unsportsmanlike? Hell yes. Is it cheap?
It's definitely.
Absolutely. It falls under that kind of gray area of stuff you don't really want to see, but
I don't teach your kids this, right?
Don't do this in youth football. But I couldn't help, it pissed me off watching it.
Yeah.
But it worked, and it was the right thing to do. It honestly is, and it's, Matt, you're putting the refs in a tough spot there, because you're watching it going, I mean, he's faking it. But if you get, one injury where a guy isn't faking it and he actually pulls his hamstring or something and you give them a penalty, well, then you have a whole other issue on your hands. So, Chris Jones did exactly what he's supposed to do as the head coach, is put his team in the best position to win. He took away the Bombers' offensive weapon, and that was smart on his part. Now it's up to Randy Ambrosie and whoever else comes together to make these decisions to penalize teams when they are clearly doing this. And for me, if you fake an injury or you have an injury, whatever it is, you're off for the rest of the series. You can't come back. Never mind three plays, six plays. That player cannot come back onto the field as long as the Bombers have the football. Because at this point, you have to make the penalty stiffer, because, A, three plays is basically nothing. And if you have any kind of a D-line rotation, you're not even missing anything out after that. And the three plays thing, I mean, it's a little bit of a breather. And you get a refreshed guy coming back into the game after that. So I think you've got to make that, whether it's, a number of plays or just flat out, you're not coming back onto the field until the Bombers are off of offense. You have to make the penalty stiffer, or else teams will just continue to do things like that.
Yeah, what's it in the NFL? It's one play, isn't it? If you're down, if you're injured, you can't.
I think it's three still.
Yeah, is it three, it's three, yeah, as well? I don't know what else more you can do. I don't think it's cheating either. I think it's, I don't know if it's even bending the rules. I don't like it, but as you guys said, it's kind of smart coaching.
Well, what would we be saying if Mike O'Shea did something like that? Like if it was kind of reverse,
ex teammate, I said we'd be loving our coach if we put something like that in play and disturbed another fan base and won the game and paralyzed the opposing offense.
Well,
here's good coaching.
Here's what I think the question is after stating I don't really have a problem because it's not breaking any rules, as you guys said. Would a guy like Mike O'Shea do it?
Oh yeah,
you think so?
Every coach should do this. Every coach I've ever been around would do this.
I don't know. I think Chris Jones would do it for sure. Oh, I don't know if Dave Dickinson would do it.
Oh, yeah, he would. Damn right he would. Doesn't need to. But if any single coach I know, the average human being has no understanding of how absolute the drive is to win at that level. And you're damn right any coach would do it.
I don't know. With all the trick plays and the intricacies that we see Mike O'Shea come up with, I don't know if he would do the same thing. I don't know if he would implement guys faking injuries to slow down another offense.
If there was a playoff game, something like that, for instance, just as an example, and if they were up against some team that was just taking it to them and driving down for or late in the game or second half, something, I have zero doubt in my mind that he would do it.
Interesting. Well, as for the loss itself, quarterback Matt Nichols had this to say about the 38-24 defeat at the Labor Day Classic in Regina.
Yeah, I mean, early in the game, they made plays and we didn't. And, you know, really throughout the game, they made plays and we didn't. You know, all three phases, made mistakes tonight and things you can't do against a good team. And, you know, it's unfortunate that we didn't come out and play a clean game. But, you know, it's what it comes down to when two good football teams meet and we just weren't able to overcome it.
I'll say this about Mike O'Shea, man. He is a player would rip your heart out and eat it as you lay on the ground gasping for air, approaching death. As a coach, you don't think that he would utilize something like this to buy his defense a little bit more time and have you slow down something so dangerous against them? Absolutely, he would.
Well, that's why I think he wouldn't, is because he is that type of player. I think he would rather get up immediately and get beat on a play than sit there and fake something as opposed to try and slow something down. I just think that's the type of – I don't know, as a coach per se, you might be on something, but as a player, I don't see Mike O'Shea ever going, oh, my hamstrings hurt, I'll go off for three plays.
Well, as a player, it's not your call. You follow the – here's a funny story real quick, okay? We're in Edmonton, and we had a fullback, darn good buddy of mine, Matt Pierce was his name, and beautifully naive and just a straight shooter. Guy, it didn't do anything, just straight as an arrow. And it's we're marching, we're losing in the game. It's the fourth quarter. We're marching down the field. We're just over midfield, and I believe we need a touchdown to win the game. It's like a 4-point deficit, something like that. It's second and six, I believe. And Cal Murphy is screaming from the sidelines, take a knee to Matt. And Matt's looking at him, going, take a knee. And Cal's like, yeah, take a knee. So Matt goes into the huddle. And I can't remember who our quarterback was, but it was a backup or a guy that wasn't real well-known sort of thing. And they come out of the huddle, break, and then on second and six or whatever it was, comes out, ball snap, takes two steps, takes a knee. And Cal's like, what the hell are you doing out there? And Matt Pierce, as he's walking towards Cal, said, you told me to take a knee. He said, you to take a knee, you idiot, not the quarterback. And then we were lining up at third and nine or something like that, right? It was just the funniest thing ever. But coaches have been using this at every level that I played at. In college, we used it, and in different times in the Bombers, never as flagrantly as what we saw on Sunday. But this is a move coaches have been doing forever.
Love to get your thoughts on this in the Boss Pizza fan line at 9 o'clock when we open the phone lines. Here's head coach Mike O'Shea on the 38-24 loss on Sunday.
We gave up 21 points pretty quickly on some big plays, three or four big plays in the first quarter, and then we had to battle our way out of it, which we did. We battled, you know, but they're a tough team. They're good. They've got a good defense. They don't give up a lot of stuff. So, a cleaner game in terms of our execution, and we win the takeaway battle, which we lost, and sure enough, they made good on it. I think, that last one of their big plays was a draw, which they ran for 48 yards, which up until that point they hadn't really run the ball very effectively, and our defense had done a good job of stuffing them. But that's a great play by Chris Randall. That's the kind of play we need when something breaks down like that. We need a big play from a veteran guy to come across and stop them from going in the end zone, and then our defense rises up and holds them. We get a sack from Sammy Hurl,
and we hold them to 3 points. That's the kind of stuff that helps turn the game back around for us. That kind of, you know, everybody sees that, and it helps keep them from getting too much more momentum. But in the first quarter, you know, it was a 5 minute span where we gave up three big plays, you know, that were real tough. Just got to stop those three plays from happening, especially in a row like that.
A defense isn't good. They're something more than good. And what's real scary for the CFL is everyone knew Chris Jones would catch traction at some point in time. I thought it was going to be last year right out of the gate. But even this year out of the gate, come out and they're stumbling. And Chris Jones is on a short leash and the people are one degree below boiling in Saskatchewan. And now they're starting to search here. I believe the headlines in the Leader Post today is something like "We've arrived" or something like they're all in now on this team.
I saw Rod Peterson tweeted that too.
Yeah, and hey, if this Saskatchewan team from game week one to Labor Day to the start of the playoffs, if they take another jump here, and there's all indication they are going to, especially if they continue to get that much tighter and more effective defensively. Look out for the Rough Riders. And that's the scariest part about Saturday's game, boys, is defense travels and it's arriving here to play on Saturday.
Well, here's head coach Mike O'Shea on the Riders' defense.
The one thing they do really well is they fly around and they make tackles. So when we get the ball, if we're not going north right now, you know, it's really tough to get out any yak yards. They're all over you. So let's give them credit. They fly around and they tackle really well, and they sort of stop you from generating momentum.
I'll tell you what, when we're talking about, and Mike O'Shea was in the previous clip, about somebody on defense stepping up and making a big play, Enoch Mwamba stepped up. And I know the Bombers got a first down on the next play, but he absolutely, I don't know, I've seen a harder, more physical, saving first down tackle than he tattooing, coming across field and absolutely tattooing Andrew Harris. He had a whale of a game, and we were talking throughout the season, where's Enoch Mwamba at? And then he slowly was getting better, and he started getting back into a groove. And we talked about it in the pregame, or at least on Friday on the big show, about his impact. I thought he had a whale of a game, and that hit he laid on Andrew Harris is, I think, what the play Mike O'Shea is talking about. Every once in a while, you need to play like that from your defense to stop some momentum.
It was a good hit, and that's the one thing I was going to say here. I've been watching with attentively. Not once prior to this game have I seen Andrew Harris get knocked backwards. And a lot of that has to do with his shoulder pads being squared on the line of scrimmage and going forward, and he just takes guys the other way. Three times in this game, knocked backwards, Andrew Harris was. This is a very physical defense. And again, that's not going anywhere, man. That's going to arrive. When the whistle goes Saturday, that defense is out there, and they're gaining momentum, and they look downright scary.
More CFL talk coming up, and of course, Boss Pizza Fan Line at 9 a.m. Up next, we get into some baseball on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The iHeartRadio app is where you stream TSN 1290 and hundreds of other radio and digital stations. Check out the Perfect 4 menu to customize your listening experience, your music, your stations. Always free on the iHeartRadio app. This is The Big Show, 52 minutes past the opening hour with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Talk some hockey at the top of the hour, get in the Jets Young Stars tournament, and discuss some Mark Stewart. Also, your chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas coming up in the next hour. Blue Jays and NHL news and notes. Rise together. We'll get the guys' thoughts on that. And, of course, Michael Hutchinson has a new mask. Gentlemen, in the Major Leagues of Baseball yesterday, as September is now here, J.D. Martinez became the 18th player to hit 4 home runs in a game when he did it last night against the L.A. Dodgers, who have now lost 9 of their last 10 games. I believe you called that on did Kershaw win on Friday against San Diego? Oh, that's the one of the 10?
1-0.
Curse you, six-pack! We'll continue to go with that. But more interesting than J.D. Martinez, he becomes the 18th player to hit 4 bombs in a game, but there's been more perfect games than four home run games in the history of the majors. And more interesting, he didn't hit a bomb until the 4th inning. And then I believe the 6th, and then the 8th and the 9th. 4 home runs in 1 game for J.D. Martinez against the Dodgers last night.
And off different pitchers, too. Makes it that much more rare. Yeah, that's cool, man, just to be smacking away bombs like that.
Do you fear Arizona? They've got a 6.5 game lead in the wild card, but they've now only trailed the Dodgers by 12.5 games. I don't mean the 12.5, but come playoff time. When you're talking the Nationals and the Dodgers.
I think you've got to. When you're talking about having a .580 win percentage, well, you'd have to fear anyone for sure, but you certainly, I mean, that's what they're doing is good enough to be leading the Central or, you know, leading the East. So you have to pay respect to what the record is. It's just that the Dodgers are on such a silly heater. And guys, I've been saying for 2 months now that the Dodgers fans are nervous at the level that the Dodgers are playing at, because they come playoff time for the last number of years, they've been set and everyone's thinking, oh, here come the Dodgers. Finally, the Dodgers are here. And then they crap the bed come playoff time. And it's just setting up. You can smell this from a mile away.
Especially with Kershaw coming back, too, where everything appears to be going in the right direction. That's going to be maybe the most fascinating part of the playoffs is Kershaw's, what's the right word, baffling and confounding meltdowns. It was in the seventh inning, his last playoff time, and both of his starts were through six, lights out, and the seventh, and it was like you were watching name your fifth starting pitcher for any team. It was crazy. And I won, like, that's going to be maybe the Dodgers' biggest, it's funny, but their best pitcher might be the biggest reason that they get held back again in the playoffs.
Yeah, and then you think of, like, even Chris Sale as the Cy Young of a season he's having, and you look at what he can't get past Cleveland and gets lit up for that. Elsewhere in the Major Leagues of Baseball, we're going to talk some Blue Jays, by the way, at 7:30 with Laura Armstrong. But Giancarlo Stanton hit his 53rd bomb of the season yesterday. He's on pace with Roger Maris. Roger Maris's record is 61. After 133 games played, they both sit at 53 home runs. That's the record. He says that's the record to him, even though his coach is Barry Bonds, and he credits Barry Bonds for a lot of his success from last year and their friends. He says the record to him is Roger Maris's, and he is currently on pace for that.
How do you guys feel when they watching SportsCenter and I saw the list when they have Stanton 53, Maris is right there, and then you see Bonds, McGuire, Sosa. Like, right away there's a, I don't know what it is, but there's an emotion of, like, if it's a dirty thing or a taint, whatever it is, the second you see a name included in that, it's real hard to separated, isn't it? I have a heck of a time separating it.
And to your point here, Troy, sorry to interrupt you there, but to your point there, like, McGuire had 60 and 54 at this pace, and Sosa was ahead of the pace that Stanton's on, but he's on pace with Maris. I think that separates for me as well. Like, it just tells me that as good of hitters as those guys were, the juice obviously made the difference. If Stanton is clean and he's on pace with Maris, Maris was clean, and you look at the same pace and McGuire and Sosa were ahead of that and Bonds was way ahead of that, like, doesn't that tell you that at least 10 of those were juice produced?
I have the opposite. Like, I say when I see that list where, and just knowing to the degree that science is involved in high-level sports like that. And when you're talking about – we're talking about a guy what's his contract? Like $300 million in around that
range?
Still
like $268 owing or something.
Yeah. And we don't think that he's utilizing science to put his body in the best possible position to be successful. Like, I see that list and I just sort of – without knowing – you know, you're asking, well, if he's clean, and me just sort of accepting the fact that chances are he's not clean. It's just, it's messy. I guess ultimately, the whole home run thing, because of everything involved, it's just messy.
Well, here's
you've got so much to sift through.
Here's the funny thing to me, and look, maybe it's not true, but everyone is so blissfully naive about certain things. Roger Maris only had two other 30 home run seasons after the 61. And everyone say, well, there's no way he could have been dirty back then. I don't know. Who's to say he didn't take some? Not to the level of what guys take now, but if a player nowadays all of a sudden exploded for 20, 30 more home runs than they've ever hit in their lives, what's everyone saying? But yeah. No one's saying anything about Roger Maris because it happened back in the good old days of baseball.
Well, dirty back,
interesting.
Dirty back then meant how hungover were you
yeah,
were.
Maybe a couple shots of whiskey or whatever. I don't know.
We have to break, but the Royal Sports Power Hour is next on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them soon, including this Friday on The Big Show. It is a short work week, so make sure you get your nominations for Subway Sports Star of the Weekend. And Friday, we'll be giving out a $50 gift card from our good friends at Subway. Eat fresh. Jim Tolf, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, the Royal Sports Power Hour on The Big Show, TSN 1290. Thank you for joining us. 6 minutes past the hour. Your chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is coming up. Laura Armstrong is going to talk some Blue Jays and some baseball with us. And our NHL news and notes, gentlemen, we'll get into lots going on around the Jets as they prepare for the Young Stars Tournament, which gets started this weekend in Penticton. And, of course, we'll have every game for you here on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. We'll delve into the rosters and talk some with our Jets staff that are going to be in Penticton covering these games for you as the week wears on. We talked about the rosters that were released and basically looking at a couple of defensemen is who we're keeping our eye on that could potentially push. So we'll get your thoughts on that as well. But seeing some tweets from some people in the media here covering the skates that are going on at the MTS Iceplex with a couple of Jets that are in town. And, of course, the NHL players getting their skates in before heading off to training camp. And one of them was Mark Stewart. And Mark Stewart was asked for an interview by a member of the local media here, and he declined. And when he left the skate, he took all his hockey sticks with him. Does not have a contract. Does he get an offer? And we discussed this when they bought him out, just about where he fits in and where he could go. And we talked last week about the number of defensemen in Las Vegas and what they're going to do with all those guys. And we look at Colorado, three guys under contract on the blue line, a guy coming in on a PTO, and you look around the league. Does Mark Stewart get another shot at the National Hockey League in your mind, even on a PTO?
I don't think so. The league is getting faster as each year goes by, and Stewie at 33 years old is getting slower. That's the harsh reality. Father Time wins all battles, and those two sort of passed already, right? Like, that's already behind him. Here, so I don't see a situation where it happens.
Yeah, I mean it's sad, but I agree. And even when you see older guys get PTOs, and if we're gonna just stick to defensemen, usually it's guys 35 and over who used to be either a first pairing or a top four pairing guy, right? Like it was somebody who played significant minutes when they were younger, and maybe a team is hoping that they have just enough left to kind of stick on their third pairing. But Mark Stewart, at his best, he was still a third pairing defenseman.
And to me, you know, Wicks, what we see in today's NHL, guys getting PTOs it's not so much that they can't play anymore in the league, it's that they economically don't really fit into the scheme of the situation with the salary cap and all the implications anymore. That seems to me to be more of a driving force of the PTO.
And if you're a team that needs a defenseman or has maybe a spot open for competition, you know, at this point, would you rather have a kid try and take that spot for you who's making maybe at most $1 million, or a guy like Mark Stewart? You know, like if I'm a team, I'm willing to give the young, and it's like that in any sport too, right? Football as well, we see all the time. If you have a young guy who's available there to take that spot, you try and give it to him. And having said that, I mean, we all watched Mark Stewart play last year, and foot speed was an issue prior to last year, and it got noticeably worse during last season, and his puck skills just aren't good enough to mitigate that loss in speed that he had. So I agree. I don't know if I see a spot for him in the NHL this year, but maybe it's in a case of him coming back to the Jets organization and I would assume probably working in some kind of coaching development there.
Or even as a community guy.
Well, I don't know. Why is he skating then?
Hey, man.
And I'm not talking about skating. I'm talking about he's out there with the other NHLers getting ready for the season.
Well, he wants to play for sure, man. But it's different. And as an athlete, typically, the athlete, him or herself, would be the last to come to that understanding, right? You're going to put yourself in a position where if somebody comes calling, that you're not going to be, oh, man, I wish I was working out at a higher level. You're going to be working your butt off to be in the position if that phone happens to ring. And I would suspect even during the season, if there's some team gets decimated by injury, he's still going to be hopeful to get a call. So I'm sure that he'll keep that up well into the season, maybe all the way through it, just in case.
It's very interesting, and I agree with everything you're saying, and I think he's at that point of his career. You add in the intangibles, and you add in that there just aren't like a lot of teams. I hate to harp on Colorado, but is there not a team when you look at as a seventh D-man, a one-year, $1 million deal, maybe he plays 40 games this year, and the rest of the time he's just – is that part of his career over as well?
I think so, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I just don't know why a team would be willing to make that move when you saw what he did in Winnipeg last year, where he was not effective at all in any of the minutes that he received. I don't know what kind of team the U.S. is going to be sending to the Olympics, but maybe that's an option for him too, where he plays a leadership role with Team USA. But I don't know what their roster looks like at the moment if he'd be a consideration. But I just don't see the NHL as a viable option for him.
Royal Sports Power Hour on TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Wester, Brandon Rewicki. We're talking some Jets. Young Stars Tournament gets underway this weekend in Penticton. Of course, you can take it all in and hear all the games here on TSN 1290. The Jets put out their slogan for this year, and it's called Rise Together. What do you think of it? Because to me, and we all went down and got our media photo headshots and delving into some of the people around the team that I know and where it seems to be a different atmosphere around these years Winnipeg Jets. And we all say that it's time for the training wheels to come off. They've built through the draft. They have this solid lineup. They've added a couple free agents. This is the year that we feel, Brandon and I, that they will make the playoffs. You say they'll be close and battling. They won't, but they take another step this year. What do you think of the Rise Together? And to me, it feels like the organization itself feels like this is the year with this Rise Together campaign and everything else they've put out there. Or am I reading too much into it?
No, 100%. That's what the organization feels. You got Blake Wheeler coming out and basically saying the same thing, a number of the other players. So long as the Parachute Club song Rise Up isn't the goal song for this year because of this whole marketing scheme,
rise
I'll be okay.
Up, rise up, rise into the power.
Please stay away from that. Ballsy, come on, stay away from that.
Well, yeah, if they're good, do it then.
Maybe pick some Rise Against. I love that band.
It should have been hashtag Whoomp There It Is if they're picking songs.
Stop it.
It's going to happen already, one day. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. It's all right. I don't really put a lot of stock into these mottos or sayings sort of thing.
Every team's
like,
got
you think
one
the players
every single
are gonna,
year.
Yeah. You think the players are in the locker room going, we got to rise together or whatever it is. Like, I don't know.
You don't even notice it as a player. Yeah. The Bombers have one every year, and it's important from a marketing perspective, that side of the organization. And it's cool when you, as a Jets fan, when you read that, you get a little bit geeked up. And you know, I'm sure some folks get goosebumps from it, just getting ready and raring to go. But it's the players, zero effect on it.
I would have cut it like something bold. Like they would never do it, but what if it was just playoffs? Like just kind of really go out, like stick your neck out there a little bit. I think that would have been fun.
Very bold.
Playoffs. Well, I think that's what they are saying. Like, right, rise together. Here we go. This is the next step for us this year. And that's why I say, like, for an organization who usually, never is... Again, some people, when I talked about it with them on the weekend, think I'm reading too much into it. I don't. This is an organization that has, I believe, slow played everything because they felt that this is the way to build it.
I tend to agree with that in the today's NHL, and I think that's how Vegas is approaching it with all their draft picks they're trying to acquire and everything else. But I just thought it was a step for the team to – I have no problem with Wheeler and Cheveldayoff and Maurice and all them believing that this is the year. I'm just a little surprised they're this bold about it.
Really?
Like, yeah.
You mean from a marketing standpoint?
From a marketing
but
standpoint.
The fan base, they can't fool the fan base. The fan base, everybody knows, man. The second that, even prior to this, people were sort of jumping the gun and saying this. But now when you look at the roster, I mean, everybody knows the reality, the truth. You know, even like right down to Paul Maurice, there's not a single person. Everybody knows the level of critical element that this season brings to this organization. They are there. There's no apparent weakness right now. They filled the holes. They've got depth. There's zero excuses, man. Everyone knows it right across the board. So you can't BS your fan base. So come out and be a little bit strong. And even the players delivering the same message. I think it's wonderful.
Interesting. Last topic on the Jets for this morning, and we'll take your calls on the Boss Pizza fan line and get your thoughts on it as well. Let's touch on Michael Hutchinson has a new goaltender mask, and it includes shots of Crappie, of course, passed away, a longtime Jets fan, longtime hockey fan, used to drive in from Kenora. We all know Crappie, Leonard Krapiowski, who passed away at 98 before the start of last season. There's a shot of him from his military days. On the one side of his Jets goaltender mask, and on the other side, there's a shot of him as we remember him, mostly seeing him at the MTS Center, Bell MTS Place now, with the salute. And the side of him with a military shot of him, and I believe it's his wife, from 1916 to 2016. Just a great tribute to Crappie on the mask of Michael Hutchinson.
Yeah, that's top shelf, bar down. Like you're saying, man, you just that's his... It's perfect, man. It's super classy. And I've had the good fortune of being around Michael Hutchinson on a couple of occasions, a few occasions with Kidsport. And that's just, he's a real good cat, man. Great with kids. And just, I think one of those guys that honors such a situation like that. And what a fantastic gesture to make towards Crappie. You just can't beat him.
Yeah, won't be a better mask in the NHL this season. That simple.
And I was asked a lot about it. Well, does Michael Hutchinson make the Jets? Is that why he's done this? And I'm like, well, in his mind, he does. But I don't believe so. Either place, it's relative. Yeah. I think you could do this. I think you could even get on with another organization if you wanted to put a little symbol of him on your mask. That's more than fine. So kudos to Michael Hutchinson and his new Crappie mask. And by the way, the Winnipeg Jets on Twitter put that out. Hustler, I believe, had it on Friday, and he tweeted it out. I retweeted Hustler's tweet as well. If you want to go there, you can find that great stuff at Jim Told Sports or at Troy Westwood at Brendan_Wiki on the tweet machine as well. We'll take a break. Your chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is next on the Royal Sports Power Hour on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Twelfth caller through for TSN 1290 presents Hockey Nights in Vegas will be our latest qualifier, 780-1290 here on the Royal Sports Power Hour on the Big Show, TSN 1290. We're sending five lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Las Vegas Golden Knights Friday, November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. We'll supply two hockey tickets, return airfare to and from Las Vegas, four nights accommodations right on the strip, and $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras during your stay, a few extra shekels. You may want to sprinkle here, sprinkle there, catch a show, get one of those steak and lobsters for $3.99. Mm. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m., 8:15 a.m., 12:15 p.m., and 5:15 p.m., or watch for bonus chances to qualify online. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show, September 11th and September 25th, October 9th and October 23rd, and November 6th. For more information, check out tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas. Go all in with TSN 1290. 12th caller through, 780-1290 on The Big Show. We will qualify our first qualifier of the morning for Hockey Nights in Vegas.
That food in Vegas, huh?
What do you think of the food in Vegas? Well, you know, I've often gone to the buffet. Yeah, the all you can eat. You get that pass. And you get the seafood and all that.
I sat there once, no joke, for 4 hours eating crab legs. Not joking. Not exaggerating.
For four hours.
4 hours. I don't know how many pounds, and I could have eaten. It was more or less just because it was time to move on than that fact that I couldn't eat anymore.
I've sat there and ate the steak and some chicken cutlets for a lengthy time with a little mac and cheese on the side. And boy, did I need it that day. I've also had people say to me, what are you doing eating the fruit? There's a buffet of endless donuts. Like, did you never have that dream where you could just, like, you have one or two donuts?
The fruit is so good, though. Like, I'm right there with it. The fruit is so tasty. That's all I – like, fruit, vegetables, and meat. I push all the other stuff is crap filler in a general sense
How
anyway.
How dare you talk about carbs like that?
Quickly, I was watching the 30 for 30 on George Best, the Irish soccer player. And when he started doing endorsements in England, and one of them was for breakfast sausages, and I thought to myself, could you imagine an elite athlete today going, I love a good breakfast sausage every morning for my cardio and everything else? It was hilarious. Who is our 12th caller through today on Hockey Nights in Vegas?
Yeah, we had a little bit of trouble with the connection, so we can't have Ron on, but it's Ron Howe.
Ron Howe, congratulations, Ronnie. You are our latest qualifier for Hockey Nights in Vegas. You're now entered, unless you win in one of them, for all five of our grand prize draws, September 11th, 25th, October 9th, 23rd, and November 6th. And we will do this all again at 8:15 today on The Big Show. 12:15, Kevin Hrushevsky will do it on the Don Vito Roundtable. And your final chance to qualify today will be at 5:15 on the afternoon ride with Hustler and Rick Ralph. And then we'll do it all again tomorrow. And keep in mind, we are going to go online, I believe, tomorrow and once a week to get a bonus qualifier on our 1290 Facebook page. So make sure you tune into that. And we'll have more details coming as the day wears on and into tomorrow. Lots of fun here. And we hope and wish you all the best, Ron, and thanks for listening to TSN 1290. Lots of reaction on Twitter about this. Would Mike O'Shea coach
look
or play?
Listen to me. Okay? Take what you understand to be your competitive nature and times it by 100. That's what is inside a guy like Mike O'Shea. I think it's almost like beautiful in its naivety. Would Mike O'Shea stretch the rules as far as he could to possibly win a game? And a guy on Twitter just made a great point. Look at what he does with the special teams rules. He stretches them. He's so far in the rule book that broadcasters and officials are like, was that changed? Or yeah, it was changed 3 days ago, and Mike O'Shea just took advantage of it, sort of thing. He would. There's no question, man. And this is just funny. These guys, winning is all that matters. And it's just, you think maybe he would rather lose and hold his head high as a good sportsman, or would you rather win and stretch the rules a little bit? Come on.
Well, that's what I
come on.
I can't see it as the stuff about the special teams to me is all within the rules. He's actually reading the rule book and doing something within it. Not that this is against the rules,
but the
ethics of it. I can't see Mike O'Shea, the player, if a coach said, look, right before the ball snapped, I want you to go down, fake an injury, and you're going to have to sit off three plays.
You don't think he listens to a coach?
I think he listens to a coach. I don't know if he actually doesn't go, come on, coach.
No,
like,
no way.
You know what?
Mike O'Shea, old school, would basically salute that coach and do exactly as he's told as in that arena as a soldier to his general. He wouldn't even question that.
I will bet you guys an unspecified amount of money.
I don't have any money.
That the Bombers.
Specify.
How about both of you just shut up? both of you just shut up for a second. I will bet both of you
a lot of money?
That the Bombers do the exact same thing Saturday.
I will guarantee
at some point there will be a questionable injury moved by the Bombers, and that'll put to rest whether or not Mike O'Shea would consider doing something like this, because I think you would have to find me a coach that wouldn't resort to doing that if it helped their team.
You know what I would like to see this, and we've seen the CFL twice in the last 2 years change rules on the fly to make the game better. I have no doubt Chris Jones is going to rely again on this. upcoming with the cheat offense of the Bombers. And I would love to see Randy Ambrosi step in and not make any sort of profound change, but I think even a little tweak to extend it to six plays where a player goes down and is injured, has to come off the field and sit for six plays, I think that would be enough to thwart this type of action, and would love to the CFL to be that on top of it.
Especially in the CFL, if you go two and out and you can't have a player for three series. I mean, you wouldn't need him if you force him to go two and out.
Before the game, it's
interesting.
Before the game, we were all talking, like myself, Chris Walby, Darren Bauman, going, they got eight D linemen dressed. What's that? That's just weird. Oh, nice.
Congratulations to Ron Howe, our latest qualifier in Hockey Nights in Vegas. We'll do it again next hour. Up next on the Royal Sports Power Hour, Laura Armstrong talks of Blue Jays with us on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The Assiniboine Park Conservancy and Manitoba Brewers Association present Brew at the Zoo Friday, September 15th at Assiniboine Park Zoo, showcasing the growing craft brewery industry in an after-hours, adults-only zoo experience. Enjoy craft beer sampling, food, and live music courtesy of Winnipeg's The Proud Sons. For more information and to buy tickets, visit assiniboinepark.ca. This is The Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki with you. NHL news and notes still to come. And a big reminder, Boss Pizza Fan Line will be open at 9 a.m. to talk everything we're talking about today on the wide world of sports. This next segment is brought to you by Olympic Homes, and it is with Blue Jays beat writer for the Toronto Star, Laura Armstrong. Laura, how are you today?
I'm good, thanks, guys. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Jays are in Boston for a series. Of course, they get the win last night. I guess that's all they can do now is play spoiler, and they're playing a ton of teams fighting or in the postseason down the stretch. What do you think the lineup will look like as these dog days of summer wear on for the Blue Jays?
Yeah, it's interesting. When the lineup came out last night, I think there was a lot of reaction from fans who were sort of disappointed that it was basically the same lineup we've seen all season, barring, you know, Troy Tulowitzki, Russell Martin, some of the guys who are injured, but it was all guys who started the season with the club except for Rafi Lopez. And I think some people were disappointed with that because they wanted to see the younger guys, Teoscar Hernandez, Richard Urena, some of the guys have come up, be in the lineup because they're thinking, you know, we're using this month to have an eye on 2018. Why not give these younger guys a run out? John Gibbons had said, you know, last month that his regulars are still going to play. DeMarlo Hale, who's acting as manager right now, said the same thing last night, that, you know, the vets are still going to, if they're swinging the bat well, if they don't need time off, they're still going to be in the lineup. So I think that you'll see a mix of players. I think that maybe, you know, this weekend when they play against Detroit, you might see some younger guys because Detroit's not in the hunt like Boston is. But at the end of the day, this team is still a competitive group of players and a competitive group of coaches, and I don't necessarily think that you're going to see the youngsters. It's not going to be a complete overhaul. You're not going to see these young players just completely take over the lineup simply because they're here.
All kinds of ifs and buts come into play when you're having a season like the Blue Jays, but just downright kooky how at this point in time now they're 3-2 at Fenway after getting destroyed at home against this team.
Yeah, it's one of those weird quirks of baseball, I think, that they've just as you said, been absolutely destroyed. They were 3-10 coming into this series against Boston this year, only one win at Rogers Center. It's been sort of real painful to watch them play at home, but they came in at the end of July here and they split the series. And at the time, you know, there was a moment where people kind of thought, oh, this might be giving them some momentum. I think it was July, like 17th to the 20th, and right before the trade deadline, and people were thinking, oh, maybe this is a series that could see them bounce back. And then they started strong in August. So it's interesting to see how far they sort of fallen in that time. Not that they really dropped off in terms of stats, but I think people expected them to rise, and instead they just sort of stayed the same. But I think that that's something that the Jays will probably get some sort of satisfaction out of in the last final months of the season, is playing spoiler. And, you know, if they can get some wins under the belt, their belt over the next month, then it can only help going into, you know, the start of next year.
Roberto Osuna has been so good for the Jays, not only this year, but, you know, in previous years as well, as their closer. But he also has blown 9 saves, including on the weekend in Baltimore. And we also saw him in Kansas City step back, says mentally he just wasn't feeling right, and took some time, and we commend him for that. Overall, when you look at Roberto Osuna and another blown save on the weekend, although he did get the victory or the save yesterday in Boston, what are your thoughts on his season and where he's at, both as a player and an individual?
Yeah, you know, I think that I think mentally he's doing okay. I don't think that he would be on the mound if he wasn't. And as he did say, you know, back in June in Kansas City, he was feeling good on the mound. That's where he felt the best. And we did see him miss a couple of games back then. And I think that we wouldn't be seeing him play right now if he was not, you know, feeling up to it. It's been a very interesting season for him because we saw him go on a huge long streak of consecutive saves, and then he gets into the All-Star break or the All-Star game through fan votes, and then since then he's really struggled, and I think six of his nine saves have come since the All-Star break. So it's really sort of been a tale of two seasons for Roberto Osuna. We sometimes forget, I think, though, that he's very young. He's only in his third season, which is a long time for a player of his age, but he's going to stumble, and I think that he's probably stumbled more than you would have expected from Roberto Osuna, especially the Roberto Osuna that we've known for the last 2 years, but it was bound to happen. I think that, you know, last night was an interesting situation. He was the one who said that he threw a cutter and it wasn't a good enough pitch. He didn't execute it well. He's been using his cutter more this year, which I think is sort of an interesting choice, because I don't necessarily know that it always works for him. But I do think that he's just working through, you know, all of sort of the struggles that young players go through. And I don't necessarily think that that's going to affect him in the future. I don't think that this is necessarily a mark on his career. And I think that he's very lucky that he has guys like Ryan Tepera, particularly in the lineup this year, who have really been able to sort of step up around him and help the Jays out.
A super scary moment on Saturday when Marcus Stroman takes a line drive rip off the elbow, and then to see him arguing to stay in the game after that. But what's the latest on that whole situation?
Yeah, so he's day-to-day still. He was day-to-day right after the game. It hit the outside of his pitching arm elbow. I understand that it's still quite swollen. He's still arguing to play on Friday. DeMarlo Hill seems to be taking a more cautious approach. He'll be throwing a side session, I believe, either today or tomorrow in Boston. And then there's the off day on Thursday. So there is still some time for him. I don't think that they'll be making a decision all that quickly, just because they want to see him, I'm sure, play on Friday, and I know he wants to play on Friday, so he's going to try and get back for that. I think that there's no point at this juncture to risk him. So if he's not 100%, if that arm is still swollen, if there's any issues, then they're not going to throw him out. There are other players who can step up and start. We've seen so many pitch for the Blue Jays this year, like, what's another one at this point? But, you know, I think that Marcus Stroman, if Marcus Stroman had his choice, he will be on the mound for Friday, which, considering what happened on Saturday, is a pretty lucky situation, because it really was a scary moment.
Blue Jays beat writer for the Toronto Star, Laura Armstrong, joining us on the Royal Sports Power Hour this morning on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Laura, we know John Gibbons, or at least we hear, you know him a lot better than we do, that he's a veterans kind of manager. We've seen that over the years. And when it comes to Jose Bautista, how much do you see him using him? And then, of course, how much is Bautista okay, do you feel, in sitting some games down the stretch if they do want to take a look at some of these young outfielders?
I think that Bautista knows that he, you know, is coming towards probably the, well, certainly towards the end of his career, probably towards the end of the time of his Blue Jay time with the Blue Jays, though he, you know, has said he doesn't really want to talk about next year yet. John Gibbons is certainly a veterans manager, and he has said that he will play Jose Bautista this month. Like, that comes into sort of his whole bigger plan with what he's going to do with these veteran players. That being said, it's an interesting position because you've got Teoscar Hernandez, who is one of these players who the Blue Jays have sort of said that they're interested in. He was the prime part of the trade for Francisco Liriano, and they need to, you know, get some time to look at him and see if he is going to be able to sort of crack the lineup come next April, when you're probably not going to see Jose Bautista as part of the Blue Jays lineup. So it's going to be an interesting balance. I think that ultimately we're looking probably at the last month of Jose Bautista's career with the Blue Jays, and I think that he will probably get quite a lot of playing time. You know, he's a guy who's done a lot for this club, and I think that, you know, he's certainly not producing the way that he was producing any of the other seasons. But I think that John Gibbons and the coaching staff in the front office sort of believe that he deserves to sort of have this time to, you know, effectively say goodbye. We're getting to that point. And so I think that Teoscar Hernandez will be one of the young players that plays more than some of the other young position players out there, like a Richard Urena. But I do think that, you know, you're still going to see a lot of Jose Bautista over the next month.
Laura, as they've played the Blue Jays this year, you've seen a number of games with both the Red Sox and the Yankees. The Yankees 2.5 games back of the Red Sox right now. Which of those two teams do you feel is better suited and built right now for a deeper run come playoff time?
Yeah, it's interesting to be in Boston and hear what the people in Boston are saying, because they seem to be a little bit, you know, worried about their team's chances. There seems to be, you know, the guy that you expected that you were going to be able to rely on, the likes of Hanley Ramirez, the likes of Mookie Betts, Xander Bogaerts, to be those guys in the lineup that you were going to be able to turn to at any point and get some production out of them. They all seem to be sort of trending downwards, and you're not going to be able to rely on the likes of Andrew Benintendi to have the sort of month that he had in August. He's still a young player, and if he can keep producing to a point, that's great, but he doesn't make a whole team. I think that in some ways, you know, you're looking at, as you do with pretty much any sports team who has the momentum going into the playoffs, and as the New York Yankees sort of gain ground on Boston is sort of really not had a great record like that people at Rogers Center last year over the last little while. So I think that in some ways you put, you know, maybe the quality of Boston's lineup more experience and you know, on paper seems to be more fleshed out as a team. I think that the Yankees, with the momentum that they've got, will give them a good run in the last month of the season, and if they can continue on that run and sort of benefit from Boston falling, I think that mental aspect might give them an opportunity to go farther than maybe we expected them to in the playoffs.
Thanks very much, as always, Laura. Great insight, and enjoy the rest of your week on the Jays beat.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Laura. Take care.
At Laura Army on Twitter, if you wish to follow her, and I highly recommend you do so. This was a presentation of Olympic Homes. Get an Olympic coach in your corner and build with confidence. Visit them online at olympichomes.ca.
Well, Batista is at 206 right now at his first home run in a month or so, and you see him out in the field getting twisted around. Like, he looks, his stuff out in the field, it turns 37 in October. Is there a chance he doesn't even play next year?
Well, the positive is his arm is still, like, he's kept some guys at first in the past couple of weeks and even thrown somebody out, I believe. But 206, like, there are people questioning why he's even in the lineup yesterday at 206.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Why would you give a 38-year-old who at this point...
He turns 37 in October.
Okay, so 37, yeah. So even then, yeah, congratulations.
But some guys really, like, some guys have a gentle decline, and other guys are just whammo, and it looks like he's a whammo guy.
And his arm's still good, but he cannot move in the field whatsoever. Yeah. And if he can't hit, he's just not doing enough for you. You can find enough arms out there that are younger, will cost you less, and will probably hit better than what Joey Bats is giving you.
And that's the whole thing with his ego and what he's used to making. Like, It's not hard to imagine a situation where he just sort of scoffs at whatever offers he might get if he does.
I honestly thought the end for Jose Bautista would be a DH somewhere at 8 or 9, maybe 10 mil, you know, coming off the bench or DHing. I don't know if that happens now, and I don't know if he wants to do that. I don't know if he's the type of player in his pride that, you know, if he's hitting 280 and has 30 bombs, I could see him doing it, or even 25 bombs. But at 206, I just don't know what the market would be for him. And the market clearly wasn't there for him this offseason. That's how he came back to the Jays. So it'll be interesting what happens to Jose Bautista in the offseason. NHL News and Notes is next on the Royal Sports Power Hour on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Another chance for you to qualify for the Hockey Nights in Vegas coming up in the next hour, and we'll talk some more CFL and some NFL, and of course, TF the Boss Pizza Fan Line. NHL News and Notes time now, gentlemen. Talk about Arizona Coyotes and their deal with RFA Anthony Duclair in just a moment, but first of all, Thomas Vanek finds a home on a one-year, $2 million deal in Vancouver, and I guess this is why we talk about Jágr, Iginla. Doan is retired. We're not surprised about that. Iginla, I'd be surprised at this point if he signed an NHL contract. But Jágr's still out there. Canucks signed Vanek on a one-year, $2 million deal. Wouldn't you rather have Jágr? And maybe money is the reason. Maybe Jágr's like, I need $3 million per, or it's not worth it.
Or does he want to play for a dumpster fire team?
Yeah, and that could be the other point of that issue. But let's talk about Vanek. Your thoughts on the Canucks and Thomas Vanek agreeing to a one-year, $2 million. 33-year-old Vanek, 17 goals, 31 assists in 68 games between Florida and Detroit last year.
Yeah, I've made my feelings clear on Vanek from 2013 to 14 in Montreal there. It was just was difficult to watch and what he brought to the table. And from an athlete standpoint, I just can't stand what he brings to the table as far as, you know, playing when he wants to play and that sort of thing. But having said that, a one-year contract for a guy like Thomas Vanek is exactly the perfect kind of contract for him, right? This is what you get paid. Go and show us what you can do. People out west are kind of excited about the Vancouver Canucks, thinking that outside of the Sedin thing, like that they've got some youth that's ready to go and in place here to, like, I know that their rebuild is difficult and a little bit strange with the Sedins out there and that whole situation. But I've heard a couple of takes from those out on the West Coast, and they kind of like what they got going on from a youth coming together with the blue line and all the rest of it out there. So it's you just kind of, you know, they're in tough, obviously, in the Pacific and all the rest of it. But ultimately, Thomas Vanek, on a one-year contract, you're going to get your points from him. But I just don't like even what he brings ultimately to the locker room. I just don't want that kind of guy in my room.
Yeah, that's cute that they like what they have there. But I don't mind the deal, actually, because it might as well have been in the press release, the Vancouver Canucks sign a future second or third round pick. That's all it is. Vanek's going to play up there in the top six, and he's going to get his points. And if he has a strong start to the year, you flip him at the deadline for, yeah, I would guess, probably a third-round pick. But even then, like, that's not a bad haul. You get another lottery ticket if you're Vancouver. So it's a move that makes them a bit better, but not good enough to kind of harm their run at somewhere in the bottom five. So I think it's kind of a shrewd move, actually, by the Canucks. I don't mind it.
They have $5 million left in cap space, $5.375 million, the Vancouver Canucks do. Also, a report I read on the weekend is Travis Green, the new head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. And by the way, Nolan Baumgartner, assistant under Green. Green says in a report that he told the Sedin twins that they need to be better. They weren't very good last year.
Yeah, you're actually going to tell the Sedins that? Well, what in the world can you expect from them? don't know, man. I don't know what exactly you would expect from the Sedins at this point in time with – what are they knocking on?
36.
Yeah, 36 years old. I don't know. I don't know what you'd expect. And they turned 37 right away.
Yeah,
so
a month.
What exactly do you want from them? They're still giving you a half a point a game sort of thing. You want them to reach into the tank from 10 years ago?
I'm just so intrigued to see if they are willing to be dealt. Mm-hmm. And if because I believe this is the last year of both of their contracts.
Yeah.
And they're their package deal, right? You're not getting just Henrik and Daniel stays in Vancouver. You got to take both of them, and I wonder. That would be cool to see them in a different jersey. I wonder if it actually happens though.
If Travis Green told the Sedin twins they need to be better, I wonder what he told Louis Erickson. I can't imagine. Also, recent signings I mentioned at the top of the NHL news notes here in the Big Show TSN 1290. That the Arizona Coyotes come to an agreement with RFA Anthony Duclair, signing to a one-year, $1.2 million contract. It was announced on Sunday. Your thoughts on that deal?
Well, Duclair's an interesting study, isn't he? You just kind of wonder what this young fella is going to eventually grow into or become here. Had a real solid second season in the league, 44 points in 81 games. And then last year, a considerable drop-off. And you wonder what the upside is for him. He's a young fella going back to his days with the Rangers that I enjoyed watching. And he looked like he had some great ceiling available there for his game. And I think it's a decent signing. And I'm really intrigued to see what he gets to. Where does his game get to?
20 goals, 81 points in 15-16. Last year in 58 games, 10 goals, 14 points, and actually spent 16 games with the Roadrunners of the AHL.
Yeah, so a mental thing, obviously, with him, right? It's not about talent. It's not about skill, and he's got some nice wheels on him, too. Yeah. And you look at the goals he scored last year, and just about all of them made it onto the highlight reel. So, I mean, you talked about people in Vancouver being excited about the young talent there. Arizona's putting together mm-hmm. a pretty nice stable full of young NHLers who are going to make a jump. And if they can get Duclair to be a part of that group, they're going to be a – might not be the best defensive team in the NHL, but they're going to be a fun team to watch this year.
Yeah, that's one of the big question marks. I still don't see them being very good, but I do like the moves they made, especially around the trade deadline. What it turns out to be, especially for this year, is a mystery to me. That's your NHL news and notes. Back on the CFL, the Tiger Cats got their first win of the season last night. Their play-by-play man, Marshall Ferguson, tells us about that and CFL when we return to the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Clay Oven East Indian Restaurants present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 129090 with standard message rates applying. Every time you do, Clay Oven East Indian Restaurants will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital keep caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaela, who is currently battling cancer. For more on Caring for Kids, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim Telf, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki with you this morning on The Big Show, TSN 1290. Your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is coming up. We're going to talk some NFL at the bottom of the hour with Jason Cole and tee up the Boss Pizza fan line. Lots to talk about surrounding the Labor Day Classic, the upcoming Banjo Bowl, faking of injuries, and everything else that's gone on in the world of sports over the Labor Day long weekend. And one of the things is the Hamilton Tiger Cats getting their first win of the season last night, 24-22. In a storm-delayed match with the Toronto Argonauts. To talk about that and some CFL across the league, welcome back in Marshall Ferguson, Tiger Cats play-by-play guy. How are you, sir?
Is it real life? Did we win?
I don't know. Did you pinch yourself when you got up this morning?
It's a little strange. It was more strange walking away from Tim Hortons Field last night back towards the parking lot to get in the car and drive home and realizing, oh my God, it's Labor Day, and that was our first win. Like, it's almost like actually winning a game puts in context the way that the start of the season has gone, because you realize that wasn't all that hard, guys. Like, that, they almost lost it a variety of different times for different reasons, but I was like, man, that feels like that should have happened a bunch of times at the start of the season, and it's hard to believe that that's the first one. But, yeah, it was a little bit of a pinch-me moment for sure.
Marshall, people are hot here on the prairies, especially in Manitoba, with Chris Jones employing the go-down-and-slow-down-the-cheetah offense of the Bombers, dressing 8 D linemen to do it and carry it out. I thought it was a fantastic tactical move on his part. Should the if it happens again this Saturday, and likely it will, should the CFL step in and possibly increase the number of plays a player has to sit out?
I listened to you guys on the post-game show there, Troy, and I have to admit, I love the discussion that you guys had about it because it was very honest. You had the one caller, and I don't remember the name, that basically called in and was as angry as a lot of people out there on the prairies are. It's disgusting. Chris Jones is a greaseball, and I can't believe that he's used these tactics and all of that. I'm with you. There's no way to legislate this because you cannot put a delay of game penalty in for somebody that may or may not actually have a cramp. There's no way to be able to dance around this. That's why I think this is such an amazing conversation, is that everybody feels vehemently that they want to improve the quality of the game and they don't want people lying in our game of football and Canadian football for their own advantage. However, there's no way to prove that anybody is not cramping or that a guy with a massive club on his hand does not have something going poorly inside that massive club on his hand. And so I agree with you that there's no way to get around it. I think that it was a good tactic used by him based on the current standards and the surroundings of the CFL, and that people have always been able to do this. But I'm sure you've gone through it, Troy. In my personal experience, man, does it ever make me angry. And I'm glad that Winnipeg fans are causing a big stir about this. And I hope that they go absolutely wild in the Banjo Bowl if it does happen again at Investors Group Field. Because to me, in the 2012 Vanier Cup, I was playing in as a backup quarterback and punter for McMaster against Laval. 37,000 people were there. We're playing at the Sky Dome. And Laval, once in a while, you know, Brandon Tennant's going down, who ends up being a CFL draft pick. And then, you know, they've got a linebacker that goes down. They've got a DB that goes down. And every time Kyle Quinlan or anybody on our offense started to kind of put together a little bit of momentum and rhythm, all of a sudden it was just completely killed. And it's a completely fair tactic based on the way that the game is officiated and run. But from my personal experience, it's just so frustrating because people don't show up to CFL games to watch people fake injuries. People show up to watch high-quality football. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers, when they got into that cheetah offense you talk about, the rhythm they play with, the excitement they're able to create out of it, how effective Andrew Harris is once they start going fast, all of those things are what people pay money to see. So from a fan perspective, I'm looking at it and saying, I would love for Randy Ambrosi to attack this topic, but how you attack that topic, I have absolutely no clue. I don't have an answer for you as to how you legislate that out of the game. I don't even think you can.
Besides that, what was your take on the Labor Day Classic that the Bombers lost to the Riders 38-24?
I thought it was a couple of missed opportunities by the Bombers in that second quarter. It just obviously, when Saskatchewan starts to put together a bit of a run, they're a tough team, especially at home right now. I have a lot of respect for the way that they've carved out that home field advantage. I will say, too, that they are one of the cockiest teams right now in the CFL, without a doubt. Every single time that you go to a shot of anybody on the sideline or otherwise, they have got a swagger about them right now in Regina that is only being inflated by the amount of green fans out there that are pumping their tires, I think. And so that's a dangerous thing, though, because whether or not it's true, I mean, whether they're as good as they think they are or not, that doesn't matter. If they believe that they're as good as they think they are, then they are as good as they think they are. I mean, it's a mind game, and they have that self-belief. It's almost like they've taken the massive amount of self-belief that has been lost from the Hamilton Tiger Cats that I've seen over the last while, and it's almost been thrown out to Regina, and now they've got twice as much out there for all the guys in green. But outside of that, I tweeted into you guys after on the post-game show just the amount of check-down passes that Matt Nichols had. He had 30-some-odd completions, I believe it was, and only two of them were over 14 yards down the field. It basically, in the games that the Bombers have played against the Riders this year, from a quarterback perspective, if Matt Nichols is not hitting Weston Dressler down the seam, he's just not shooting the ball down the field at all. Like, it's Darvin Adams hasn't been much of an over-the-top guy against the Riders this year. And they've had their chances to kind of take the top off, and there's been a couple of missed throws, especially back in that Week 2 matchup, which, of course, was the first for the Bombers after the Week 1 bye. But, my overall impression is, man, Saskatchewan believes in themselves a heck of a lot, and whether it's true or not, I think that they, as long as they believe it, it's a good thing for their players.
That defense looks damn good, and you know, being around defenses like this, Marshall, and knowing how things sort of morph and grow, like, their personnel looks pretty solid. And Chris Jones, it was just a matter of time until he took effect and a hold of this team, and it certainly looks like that's the case here. I was really intrigued, and I think the move, the chess match going on here with Saskatchewan basically all game long, sending three guys, dropping extra personnel into coverage, and watching how much time Matt Nichols had to send the ball down the field, but there was just no options for him as far as what he interpreted. And the ball security that Paul LaPolice carries forward and has instilled in Matt Nichols didn't look like he was willing to Mike Riley it down the field and 50-50 it on a number of occasions. The counterpunch to what they did defensively this week for Paul LaPolice, to me, that is what is going to capture this upcoming game on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you, Troy. And the part of that three-man rush that I found really interesting, and again, I'm not an expert on, you know, protection schemes and all the rest, but from my experience, what essentially they were doing in Saskatchewan is all season long, on second and long, the Riders have just lined up pretty much three men and said, we're going to get after you with just three guys drop into coverage and force you to throw into a bunch of different bodies, right? There's nine guys dropped out into coverage. What they did in this game, and I don't know if it was all that much of a variation from what they've done, but to my eyes, what they did was Toby Antiga became that kind of rover guy, that defensive end that kind of plays off the ball, looks like a linebacker. So to a quarterback's eyes, it's the same thing that the Tiger Cats do once in a while with Adrian Tracy. If I step to the line of scrimmage, I go, okay, three guys with their hand on the turf down there, and I've got an extra defensive lineman in the ball game, and he's a stand-up as a linebacker kind of walking around and all the rest. So what I'm going to do is identify those are the four main pass rushers. Now, what they did, because the running back is going to either, you know, if the linebacker blitzes, the running back stays in to protect. If the linebacker doesn't blitz, the running back can release out into a route near the flats or a little check down, whatever it might be. So the running back and the linebacker are always directly related. But that fourth defensive lineman, who's a stand-up walk-around guy in Toby Antiga, he doesn't really play by those rules. And he was basically a quarterback spy who was waiting. Basically, as the Riders would show just a three-man rush, Andrew Harris would leave the backfield. And as soon as Andrew Harris leaves the backfield, well, all the offensive linemen, all five of them, were dealing with those three rushers, and they were content to try and deal with them. And Toby Antiga comes flying off the backside as a delayed blitzer, basically, coming from a stand-up linebacker position. The really interesting part that I agree with you, the transition that I think is going to be important in the Banjo Bowl is, let's say that the Riders decide to go with that stand-up, you know, it's the fourth guy against a three-man rush. And if they do that, and maybe the Riders end up taking themselves, you know, into a spot where on second and long, they just declare, we're going to rush three and we're going to have this fourth as the quarterback spot because now it's been on film for the last week. The adjustment is with Andrew Harris. Andrew Harris doesn't have to stay in the block because if he does so, the linebacker is going to blitz and you're still going to be outnumbered. What he needs to do, I think, is to show that he's leaving out to the flats. And the second that Toby Antiga blitzes, go to the spot that is vacated by Toby Antiga, run a little slant underneath, run a little circle route from the running back out of the backfield into that open space, because Andrew Harris, as we know, guys, can just beat linebackers one-on-one in man coverage. I think that's the adjustment. Off the top of my head, as I'm watching that game, I'm going, man, they're just delaying this blitz, and they're just timing it up so that Matt Nichols' eyes tell him one thing, but he's actually getting blitzed by another number of players that he doesn't actually see. I think the adjustment is Andrew Harris has got to be the weapon that you check the ball down to over the middle and get him on the run. I think he could have a lot of yards after catch when they play the Banjo Bowl.
Marshall Ferguson, by the way, is joining us on the Big Show, TSN 1290, 14 minutes past the hour. He's a Tag Cats play-by-play guy and a big part of TSN 1150 in the Hammer. I know with the delay in the storm in last night's game, you had CFL Commissioner Randy Ambrosi on. Did he address anything else that went on, or did he delve in any further what's taken place in Hamilton over the past week and a half?
Yeah, it's one of those things where when I heard we're getting Randy Ambrosi, you guys know how it is. I mean, it's just rapid fire. It was chaos in there. We had that long lightning delay last year when we were out in Winnipeg, and you know, things are happening at a high rate. And so I find out, oh, we're going to get Randy Ambrosi, and immediately I'm going, okay, well, we got to ask the obligatory question. So Jim Taddy, who's my co-host in there, he's usually our pre-post and halftime guy, and so he has the opportunity to be able to kind of jump in and Randy Ambrosi comes in the booth, and we start asking questions about the process of the weather delay. And, you know, I joked with him about the fact that he probably didn't have to deal with being a meteorologist at his other jobs, and he's kind of finding it interesting. We had a chuckle. And then right as I'm about to go, Randy, what did you just think of this week? Like, what was your perspective on this week? Not just Art Briles, not just Manziel, but the week in Hamilton. Like, I wanted to start messing around with Ambrosi a little bit because he was having fun. He was in a carefree environment. He was pretty relaxed. It was a lightning delay. He knew he had time to kill, and so he was doing us a solid by joining us. And I thought this would probably be a good time to get an honest, fun answer out of him on a topic that hasn't been all that much fun in Hamilton this week. He's kind of opened up to us at this spot with time to kill. And then just as we were about to do that, somebody from the CFL came and tapped him on the shoulder and said, "Hey, we got to go check out the field." And he went for a run back out the back door. I went, "No, I was ready to have something fun and different and get a good answer out of him." But, yeah, we didn't have a chance to dive into anything with the Art Briles controversy or what's the drone with Manziel or anything else. He was pretty by the book when he joined us last night, unfortunately.
Marshall, we appreciate your time. As always, great insight, great stuff. And I guess it'll be a better week this week for you around the Tiger Cats. Enjoy that, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Awesome, guys. Thanks. Have a great day.
Thanks so much, brother. Take care, man.
You too.
I would love to know. And just knowing the way coaches watching the outrageous hours that they put in at the best of times and knowing sort of the mind a little bit of Paul Appelese, 16, 18, maybe even more than that hour days in count this counterpunch upcoming here for the Saskatchewan Roughriders. He is burning the midnight oil in putting game plan together. That you can be guaranteed of.
Well, and that's what we touched on at the start of the show, too. I don't know how to read the Labor Day Classic. Obviously, they didn't execute. They gave up too many big plays in the first quarter, and Saskatchewan played very well, hard to climb out. But it's much like the Calgary game. They didn't play well. So if they played well and lost, I might read more into this. But this Sunday's game, and as you mentioned, the counterpunch and what's it come up with, really will dictate to me more so of how I feel about the 7-3 Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And if they can, you know, even this home and home, or if they lose, what does that say about them and how they went about their execution? Or if they win, how well they executed? It's going to be fascinating this Saturday. And you bring up a great point about how they scheme and what they come up with to counter what took place in Labor Day.
But to me, you're talking mostly defense. Like, to say they didn't play well, you know, if Wicks and I go out to play a sport and Wicks takes it to me, is it me not playing well, or is it Wicks imposing his will? And to me, when the Bombers offense was on the field and the Saskatchewan defense was on the field, the Saskatchewan defense imposed their will a whole bunch of that game. It wasn't so much the Bombers weren't playing well, it was Saskatchewan was dictating things. And so that is of concern for everyone in the West going forward, and certainly for the Bombers on Saturday.
We'll take a break and take our next qualifier on the Hockey Nights in Vegas on The Big Show next, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Twelfth caller through for TSN 1290 presents Hockey Nights in Vegas will be our latest qualifier, and we will also get you a Jets Gear gift card just for doing so, as well enter you in our five grand prize draws, as we here at TSN 1290 are sending five lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November, with those taking the Winnipeg Jets and the Las Vegas Golden Knights at the T-Mobile Arena on Friday, November the 10th. The prize includes two hockey tickets, return airfare to and from Sin City, four nights accommodations right on the strip, and $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m. right now, at 8:15 a.m., 12:15 p.m. on the Don Vito Roundtable with Mr. Kevin Olszewski, and at 5:15 p.m. with Hustler and Rick Ralph on the Afternoon Ride. You can also watch for bonus chances to qualify online, and you can also now watch on a TSN 1290 Facebook page. I believe tomorrow, right after we go off the air on The Big Show, we'll be qualifying somebody else. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays, as I said. However, live on the air at 7:15, 8:15, 12:15, and 5:15 p.m. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show, September 11th, September 25th, October 9th, October 23rd, and November the 6th. For more information, check out tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas. Go all in with us here at TSN 1290.
1290, huh? $1,290. What would you do with that kind of bread? You're down there for like 3 days. You can just give her. Hus has got a. I think Hus should unleash a little bit of a booklet that goes along with anyone that qualifies, just to sort of set the stage.
Like a syllabus for your stay.
Yes, essentially, on how best to approach the activities.
Let it ride. Let it ride. Although divvy it up into four envelopes so you can eat every day, which isn't hard to do in Vegas. You can eat cheap, man.
Oh, but you can go a day without eating. Eating, to me,
fair. A person could or I should go
setting
a day
aside
eating.
Bail might be more important than setting aside food money.
That's a phone call away. You don't need to save bail money. That's a phone call from anyone. Fair. You get a list
veteran,
together.
There's a veteran outlook right there.
That's right. Who's our 12th qualifier today at 8:15 on the Big Show, TSN 1290?
It is Mark Saunch.
Mark Saunch. Congratulations, Mark. How are you today?
Mark had to go.
Oh.
But he's doing well.
Mark very had doing a well.
Sorry, I thought we had Mark on the line. Congratulations, Mark. You are our 12th caller through today, along with Ron Howe in the Royal Sports Power Hour. And you two fine gentlemen, just for qualifying, get a jet skier gift card. You can pick that up starting now, anytime. We're open from 9 a.m. Well, I guess you have to wait till 9 a.m. till 4 p.m. right here at 1445 Pembina Highway. A jet skier gift card just for qualifying, and you're in for all five of the grand prize draws unless you win one of them. But if you don't on September 11th, you're still qualified for September 25th, October 9th, October 23rd, and November 6th right here on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
Sanchi and Hauser. Good luck, boys.
Sanchi and Hauser. Once again, you can do it again with Kevin Hrushevsky and the Don Vito Roundtable at 12:15 today. And, of course, at 5:15 p.m. with the Afternoon Ride, Hustler and Rick Ralph. And, of course, like we say, stay tuned to our social media. There will be bonus chances to qualify online. And, of course, we'll be doing a special Facebook page qualifier tomorrow right after the Big Show goes off the air at 10 a.m. So, by all means, friend us on Facebook at TSN 1290 Facebook page.
Did you guys happen to catch a Shapovalov match?
I did not, actually, but I saw the highlights.
It was good, man. He just gave away that first set. Man, there was a couple of times he was just poised to dominate, but just couldn't quite pull it off on Busta. And then, like, eventually, you know, it was in the first set or sometime soon there where, like, just basically double the number of winners of Busta and then also but double the number of unforced errors. Like, he just, the brilliance was so on Shapovalov's side, but just couldn't reel it in long enough, and he just saw Busta just sort of methodically plod through the match and go 7-6, 7-6, 7-6. Man, it was right there for him.
It was, you know what it was kind of like? It was like watching Team North America at the World Cup of Hockey.
Yes.
Where it's like they couldn't get it done. But you're watching it going, my God, yes. Is this going to be scary? Yeah. And that's what Shapovalov is like. 18-year-olds are not supposed to do that in men's tennis. And it's crazy to think, never mind 5 or 6 years, but just next year.
Yeah.
Where is he going to be at next year? And how high will he climb in the rankings already before he reaches 20?
That backhand he's got is just wicked, man.
Is this good enough at the U.S. Open for him?
Ooh, I would say so for where he's at right now, and like what Wicks is saying, what he's poised to accomplish. I'm basically emotionally all in, like pushing. Just can't wait for him. Anytime he's playing, it's basically must watch. Right now.
If you were watching the matches and nobody told you where they were ranked, and you said, "This guy played one of these is the 8 seed, one of these is the 12 seed." You'd probably think it's pretty, like he looks like a legit star.
Yes,
right now.
Agreed.
NFL season starts this Thursday night. We will delve into it with our good friend Jason Cole from the Bleacher Report next on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
It's one of my jams.
I wouldn't mind watching you jam to this.
One of my former colleagues, Mira Bahadasingh, Badass Bahadasingh, who's now one of our city's finest, the Winnipeg Police Service, I used to walk into the newsroom like this. And she would get right down with it. I'd just walk in, biggie, 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 and she'd just start funking out. Now she's in her cruiser somewhere going, don't ever tell that story again. And I never funked out to that, Toth. I asked you to be quiet.
The Big Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca, 1.5 hour away, actually 28 minutes from the Boss Pizza fan line, and lots to talk about with you today. As we get closer to the hockey season, the Young Stars tournament right around the corner, we touch on Mark Stewart. If you think he plays again in the National Hockey League, it's a deal. And, of course, the Labor Day Classic and all that went on with the faking of injuries in order to slow down the Blue Bombers' hurry-up offense, the cheetah, as it's called. We'll delve into that with you as well. We'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line in our next segment, but the National Football League gets started this Thursday with the New England Patriots and the Kansas City Chiefs kicking off the season. Lots to talk about around everything that's gone on in the National Football League and, of course, the upcoming start to the season. What's the one thing the biggest question to you as the NFL season gets underway? Not the question, but like what's something that's intriguing? There's so many storylines. What's maybe something that stands out you're looking forward to?
Yeah, I'm most locked into just what level of brilliance do we see from Tom Brady again this year?
Well, that is a topic up for discussion after the Patriots traded their third-string quarterback for Philip Dorsett, the receiver, after Julian Edelman went down, and really what it says about their backup and Tom Brady going forward. To talk NFL and help us tee up the season as it gets started on Thursday, as we said, from the Bleacher Report, our good friend Jason Cole. How are you today, sir?
I'm great. What's going on?
Not too much. We're pretty excited for football around here, not only in the Canadian Football League, but, of course, the launch of the NFL season on Thursday. What do you make of the trade the Patriots pulled off with their third-string quarterback, and what does it mean for Tom Brady and Mr. Garoppolo going forward as a UFA after this year?
Well, I think that overwhelmingly we're going to see Garoppolo come back. They liked Brissett a fair amount, but I think that they realized he sort of hit a wall in terms of what they were going to be able to get out of him. And they went out and got a good, really good return guy, somebody could really help him there. I don't think that Dorsett's going to come in and be an explosive, productive receiver for them right away, because it's so hard to learn that offense quickly. I mean, you had so many option routes and things that you have to do that I think it's going to be hard for, you know, Dorsett to learn all that stuff. I think it's going to be special teams primarily for him. But in terms of getting back to your question about Brissett Garoppolo, I think everything indicates from what I can tell that they're going to keep Garoppolo. Now the question becomes what's going to happen with Brady. And Brady, I think, fully intends to play for, you know, 3 or 4, maybe even 5 more years. So I think they're going to play it year to year at a certain point with Brady. I mean, when you've got a 40-year-old quarterback, you can't exactly expect that he's going to come back every year. But Tom's not going anywhere as long as Tom is productive in any, you know, and even moderately productive. It's going to be hard for Belichick to say goodbye to him.
Jason, how ultimately do you see this situation with Ezekiel Elliott playing out?
Oh, I think they'll reach some kind of compromise before it goes too far into the courts. I think the NFLPA is, you know, doing what it can legally to try and get some kind of action out of the courts, and they'll get some kind of stay in the lower Dallas courts. There's no question about that. But the gamble of playing with the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in Texas, I mean, you're talking about one of the most conservative courts in the nation. I would be surprised, you know, unless it's really partisan about the Cowboys, I would be surprised if the judges in that court, given the people, you know, all, given who put them up, okay, all the Republicans in that state that put them up, that they're going to go against the power that the commissioner has in the collective bargaining agreement. So ultimately, Ezekiel is going to lose in court. It's just going to take an awful long time. So, you know, he'll get to play. Maybe he'll even get to play the entire season. In the meantime, the worst part about this, it's going to keep the whole story alive. And if you've gone through any amount of those court filings, I mean, this is an ugly, ugly story. It's a real. It's ugly for both people. It's tawdry. It's disgusting. And I think it's going to do more damage to the long run. I think the one thing that Ezekiel doesn't get, and his dad, you know, is popping off all the time, but we're going to take this to the Supreme Court. No, you're not, because this is going to expose a lot of dirty laundry. It already has. There's more to be found.
Jason, another hurricane, Hurricane Irma, might delay or postpone or move the Dolphins' home opener. We've all, you know, seen what's happening in Houston, but I want to touch on J.J. Watt and what he's done, raising $18 million for that city.
It's over 19 now.
$19 million from a guy who just hoped to get, I believe it was a couple of $100,000 initially.
Well, he put in $100,000 of his own, hoping to get to $200,000.
Right.
Blew past that. Has it 19? As of yesterday, was it I think $19.2 million when I checked the last time. So
unbelievable, really. Like, just touch on the effort he's done, especially, you know, when training camp's underway and everything else. Not that he does. I don't expect players to step up and do this, but this is absolutely phenomenal. The initiative he's taken on.
Yeah, I mean, look, for somebody and did it. You know, the difficulty of it wasn't hard, the effort that everybody else put on. And I think this shows you what athletes, what stars can do with even very little effort. I mean, basically he said, this great story by Jeff Darlington of ESPN that he did. He sat down with JJ and said, look, I got a camera phone, a website, and a bunch of followers. And, you know, I did some videos and, you know, all of a sudden you see where it, you know, over $18 million, now over $19 million. It's an amazing thing, and I think it's you know, you could see more athletes do this in very simple ways. But JJ is sort of perfect, you know, big strapping guy in Texas, hero, taking his brand and making it meaningful, and in the process promising people again and again and again that all the money will go to people who need it. It's not going to be like other funds where half the money goes to operating costs and then half the money goes to people who need it. He's being very specific in saying, look, everything is going to go towards people who are in need at this point. And I'm looking right now, it's $19.7 million. He's almost at the $20 million goal.
Jason, a lot of people are really high on the Packers this year. They had the 31st ranked pass defense last year. They have made some improvements defensively. Have they made enough?
They got Aaron Rodgers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're good. They're good. I mean, look, it's a passing league, and as long as you've got the number one quarterback in the league, you've got a fighting chance. Yes, is their passing defense poor? And ultimately, do I think that that's going to upend them from going all the way? Yes, I do think that they've got too big a problem to overcome from a pass defense standpoint. But all of that said, as long as you can score a lot of points, by the end of the season, you're going to be in the hunt. And even in the playoffs, if you look around the NFC in particular, you're looking at a lot of teams that, you know, have to throw the ball and are not great on pass defense. They may be good in some ways, like Seattle may be good on pass defense, but they're not great anymore. Arizona's pretty good on pass defense. They're not great. Dallas is horrible on pass defense. The New York Giants, while fairly deep, are not fantastic. I think that may be enough to get you through the NFC this year and get you into the Super Bowl. Some team that's very flawed is going to get through the NFC.
Jason Cole from thebleacherreport.com joining us on the big show today to help tee up the NFL season on TSN 1290, 41 minutes past the hour on the big show. What kind of stories are you looking for going into this season, and specifically this first week? What stands out to you that you're going to keep an eye on?
Oh, look, I love, there are a couple of divisions I really love, actually three of them. The NFC East, I'm just fascinated with how that's going to play out, because I think the first place team is going to be around 11 wins, and the last place team is probably going to be a 7 or 8. So it's going to be really tight all year long. I think the NFC South is similar, although I think 12 or 13 wins is probably going to win that division. And then the AFC South. So you got the NFC South, the NFC East, and the AFC South. Because I don't know what to expect out of Houston because of the quarterback situation there. I know their defense is going to be good, but, you know, if Savage stumbles at all, how do they work this thing with Deshaun Watson? Do they continue to go through that revolving door? You've got Tennessee that is trying to make a run here and has built a really run-heavy kind of offense. You've got Indianapolis. What's going to happen with Andrew Luck? You've got Jacksonville with that incredible dynamic that they have in the front office between Tom Coughlin and Doug Marrone. And a lot of really great players, just no quarterback that you can really trust at this point. So I love those three divisions, and I'd love to see how those play out. Aside from that, look, I think going back to the Seahawks, to me the Seahawks are a team where do they have enough to get one last stand? Because I think that defense is aging, and I think it's just about done. And it showed really, really strong signs of failure at the end of last year because of all the injuries that they had. I don't think that team is getting drastically healthier over the long term.
You touched on the Seahawks. Thoughts on the Sheldon Richardson trade?
That's a good trade. I mean, look, Sheldon's in a money year, and Sheldon's all about the cash. So he's been talking about it for 3 years about getting paid. So, you know, put your money where your mouth is, dude, and, you know, play. That's what you want. So, yeah, they gave up a high price relatively in a second-round pick to get him. But he's an extraordinary talent, so, and they can franchise him again if they want to for a relatively reasonable sum. But, yeah, they got the best player in that deal, and they needed some youth and some ability in the interior defensive line to help set up their outside guys like Averill and Bennett. So I like the deal overall.
Is the Steelers' defense good enough to win the Super Bowl this year?
Barely. I mean, it got better with the Hayden trade, but you know, Hayden's got to stay healthy. Everybody's talked about that one. You know, Bud Dupree flashes signs of being a great pass rusher. Is he actually going to be that guy? Cam Hayward, is he going to be disruptive enough? Is that secondary going to hold together even now that you add Hayden? You know, you got Artie Burns going into his second year. Shazier, everybody talks about, but you know, this is not a linebacker league anymore. As much as I like Shazier, it's really about can you get pass rush and can you cover? And I'm not sure they're great enough at either to be, you know, to get through this whole thing, especially against the Patriots. I thought in the playoffs they would give the Patriots much bigger fits, and they failed miserably in the playoffs.
Jason, we appreciate your time. Should be an exciting opening week, and we'll talk to you real soon.
No problem, guys. Be good. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Jason.
Jason Cole of the Bleacher Report. I was going to ask you guys, do you think I like the Steelers this year. I don't know why. I like them to sort of get over the hump and at least get back to the Super Bowl. But we'll do this tomorrow. We'll do the AFC, NFC one day Wednesday and the other division or the other conference on Thursday and get our picks on who you think will win the division and go to the playoffs.
Boy, the New York Jets look like they're tanking something fierce here.
How do they win?
They're at Cleveland on the October 8th. No, November. November 8th. They're at Cleveland in the first third of the season.
Cleveland's miles better.
Yes, I agree.
And that's saying something.
That's their only chance, though.
That's like, how terrifying is that when the Browns are clearly better than you in basically every position in your organization? I don't know how many touchdowns the Jets are going to score this year, let alone wins.
That's their only chance. They might go. They're so bad, they might go 0-20 this year.
So if you're a season ticket holder, do you buy a ticket?
No. Why would I pay $500?
So say you've been a Jets season ticket holder for 20 years, and God be with you if you have been. But is this the year where you just go, come on?
The only thing is that in America,
you like to go to the games and watch on Sunday.
Religion,
yeah,
right. Like the tailgating, the whole, like, the game is damn near secondary for a lot of people with the bigness of it, right? The partying on, so like Sundays, people. It's so, yeah, I don't think anybody, or not many, will, but this is one sad situation.
Like, if you love the NFL, you're going to go watch Brady when he comes to town, even though you know they're going to pound your team by 40 points. Like, I still get why you would go, but I'm just wondering, as a season ticket holder, like, I talked to Bomber season ticket holders 2 years ago that were just like, 32 years. No, I might buy a ticket and go to a game,
man.
But
the,
it's just...
The mentality in Canada compared to America, right, is night and day.
And I agree with you. That's why I'm asking. Like, does this hurt them at all, do you think?
Like, what's the line when the Patriots do go to New York on October 15th? What's that line going to be?
40. I don't even know. It might end up not be that. Can you guys name? Can you guys name three starters on their offense?
The Powell, the running back, Matt Forte, but yeah, he's getting cut, isn't he?
I've been joking about their quarterback depth chart for weeks now, reading it, and it sounds more like line four in a NASCAR race. McCown, Hackenberg, and Petty sounds more like it's a NASCAR race than a quarterback depth chart.
They had Fitzpatrick and Geno Smith as their quarterbacks last year, and they have noticeably downgraded at the position, talent-wise.
Downgraded. If you have Tom Brady, I don't even know if you start him on your fantasy team that week, because realistically, like, does he play more than a half?
Oh, he plays all four quarters, and they are throwing the ball deep in the fourth. That's what I'm looking forward to the most. Yeah. What is the line going to be for the first Patriots Jets game?
And if they play Seattle the next week, when asked about the 78 points that they pounded the Jets with, Belichick will just say, "We're on to Seattle. We're on to Seattle." NFL season Thursday on TSN. Bell, of course, has your CFL and your NFL rights. It's going to be a great year, and we will tee up who we think will come out of each conference tomorrow and Thursday here on The Big Show. We'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line next on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca, and we are teeing up the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290, or send us a text at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. On the Labor Day Classic, your thoughts on the 38-24 defeat by the Bombers to the Riders?
Well, the four big plays against sort of sealed the deal early, right? You have two receptions allowed defensively of over 50 yards to Roosevelt and Grant. You allow the rush, the Cameron Marshall rush of 48 yards, and then your special teams cover team lets you down. Nick Dembski just cutting right up the gut of that punt cover team on the Bombers. So you got four big plays in the first half that made a fantastic contribution to getting buried early on. So the big play issue for the Bombers, take the punt return out. Those three on defense, that was a concern coming into the game, where the Bombers were the worst in the CFL in allowing big plays at 35, and that's a concern going forward. The next, the biggest thing offensively for sure is, what does Paul Appelese do about the three line rush coming at you, and Matt Nichols not being able to solve things from a secondary standpoint or find open receivers, that whole thing. And then, of course, what got the fans superheated, and I think we'll get a lot of calls on this, is the fake injury thing. That's going to happen again on Saturday when the whole cheetah thing gets going up again. And boy, will it get loud at IGF when there's a player down on the ground, hurt or not, just because of what was witnessed at the Labor Day Classic.
It's interesting, too, because we were kind of all in agreement that this is something that the Riders kind of had to do and shouldn't necessarily be vilified for it, because it is technically within the rules. And if the Bombers did the same thing, if the Riders went to the hurry-up and it was killing the Bombers, mm-hmm. and they dropped an injury and they dropped a guy on the field, I bet 95% of Bombers fans would look at that and say, nice coaching move, O'Shea.
Yep, for sure.
I just don't see it happening. I don't think Mike O'Shea would do that as a coach, and I wouldn't love to see it, but I can't imagine what his reaction would be as a player if a coach said to him, you know, we need you to take a knee here or go
if
down
Don
and sit
Matthews
out three plays.
Told Mike O'Shea to take a knee, he would drop. And that's period. Players, you don't question the coach, especially like in today's new sports world. I can understand that notion. Back in the day of Mike O'Shea, are you kidding me? No way.
He might do it because a coach told him to do it, but I don't think he would like it, and I do not see him as a coach.
Players used to laugh about it when they were told, our guys, like if the O-line needed to go down after an extra point or something just to give the defense a little bit more time to rest, guys would joke about it.
So it's not breaking a rule, but is it disrespectful to the game?
Yeah, sure. but give me the W, right? It's unsportsmanlike. It's disrespectful. It's not something you'd want to necessarily teach your kids, earmuffs kids, drink the chocolate milk and have fun playing sports. When you're in the big leagues and people are getting fired or keeping their jaws, winning or losing, you do whatever you can to get the W.
What are your thoughts on the Labor Day Classic? What are your thoughts on the faking injuries to slow down an offense? Would you do it? Do you like it? Do you think it's disrespectful? Also, the Young Stars Tournament starts this week for the Jets. Does Mark Stewart play again? And we're also asking about the Rise Together theme that the Winnipeg Jets have put out. Is it bold? Is it right on pace? Do you like it? Do you not like it? Anything and everything next on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the fifth and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg, competing in challenges and puzzles with your team's celebrities September 22nd and 23rd. The money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, state-of-the-art facilities. To learn more or to register, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim Tolth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and your calls on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, or text us your thoughts at at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Lots to talk about concerning the Labor Day Classic, the Bombers losing 38-24, upcoming Banjo Bowl, the CFL Labor Day weekend as a whole. Calgary just pummeled Edmonton, and of course Hamilton gets their first win under head coach June Jones, 24-22 against Toronto. NHL news and notes, of course, Mark Stewart. Does he play again, do you think? Does he get an offer? Young Stars Tournament coming up this weekend. What are you expecting? And the Rise Together theme from the Winnipeg Jets. Your impressions of that as well. So we'll get into this for the full hour. And, of course, reminder that Hockey Nights in Vegas, next qualification is coming up at 12:15. On the Don Vito Roundtable with Mr. Kevin Olszewski. To the phone line, 780-1290. Chip, you're kicking us off today. Welcome to the Big Show.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
I'd like to comment on the Rise Together theme of the Jets. You were mentioning earlier you're a little surprised of the boldness of it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think they really have a choice. Like, there's a lot of frustrated fans here. Like, this is going into year seven, I believe, and I think it has, in the words of Blake Wheeler, I think it has to happen this year. Like, next year, Buff's a year older, Wheeler's a year older, Little's going to be gone probably. And I think it has to be this year, or else they've got to have some serious changes going on. So, what do you think of that?
Yeah, no, I think it does. Like, along the lines of it has to happen this year. I just think it's ready, and they've built towards this. I'm just surprised at the boldness of it. But then again, I'm not. Like, they've said they're going to draft and develop. It's been six. Like, to me, would they have done this last year or 2 years ago or the year after they made the playoffs? There's no way they would have done that. I don't think it's done. Is my point, in order to help, you know, get support and tell, I think they honestly believe this is where they're at, and hence that's why this has come out, and it's been a little bit more bold than we've seen in the past. You guys?
I don't even think it's that bold, man. It just says Rise Together, and then the statement is saying something, our mission is clear and our direction is precise, fueled by passion, a new altitude awaits us all. This is just basic marketing, man. It's not bold. These are always fun, catchy phrases. I really enjoy the marketing approach to the different teams, and you'll always have a phrase like this and send it out to your fan base and trying to attract new fans and all the rest of it. I think it's a fantastic phrase, and I don't find it too bold or not, but I'm right. Everybody knows where the organization's at and what the temperature of the fan base is here. Everyone has the same expectations here, and it's more or less, in a general, it's like playoffs or bust, playoffs or look out sort of thing, is the general understanding of the fan base, there's no doubt.
Yeah, to me, bold is playoffs, or it's time, or something like it, to me, it's just kind of a general statement. Like, I don't really look at it, I'm not putting much thought into what this means at all, really. I think it's just kind of meh. Like, bold would be something along the lines of saying this team is playoff playoff ready or expectations are playoff bound this year.
But isn't it more bold than what you've seen? Fueled by passion, all that stuff is just generic.
Rise Together is pretty generic, man.
Rise Together is we're going to rise this year. We're going to get rise. We're rising above what we've done in the past. This is it. We're going to rise together, you and us and the fans. To me, that's telling us they're taking it to the next notch or taking a step forward.
Yeah, I'm not hit in the same manner.
Okay. Like, it's up for interpretation, obviously. To me, it stood out as opposed to the general fueled by fans or we have passion or anything like that.
But I do think they have they understand where their fan base is at. And I think they capture it fantastically in the statement to follow Rise Together. Like, there's a feeling among our fans, our city and our province, a feeling of momentum, optimism, and excitement. That's bang on. Our team built with patience and purpose is ready to compete, ready to excel, ready to emerge. That's bang on. Our mission is clear and our direction is precise, fueled by passion, and a new altitude awaits us all. Should be a poster. This poster, this should be put into a poster and it would be in 100,000 kids' rooms in their house. I think it's just fantastic marketing.
Chip, we appreciate the call on the Boss Pizza fan line.
What about Trouba not being in that picture? That was the big thing to me when this came out. Everyone's looking at you got Ehlers and Shifley and Wheeler and Line A and Buff and no Trouba. People are like, Trouba in the picture, huh?
To me, I thought he's just not back yet. But from what I've been told, and this is just from a fan, so I don't know if it's how accurate it is, but they said that this was shot last year, the headshots, and Trouba wasn't here then.
It's no headshot. They're all kind of action-y shots, and I guarantee you they got action-y shots of Mr. Trouba in their library.
But all the action shots of the players they focus on. It's not like they show a picture of Wheeler and then an action shot of Bufflin. It's following the headshots or the faces they're zooming in on, and Trouba wasn't here when they shot this last year.
Yeah, and I wonder, too, because Buff's the only defenseman on there, right? Morrissey's there? Okay.
No, well, not in the one I'm looking at. It's just Scheifele, Ehlers, Line A, Wheeler, and Buff.
Yeah, so see, like, and to me, if Trouba's on there, then everyone's saying, well, why isn't Buff on there? Like, well, is the organization?
Yeah,
they're not, because his contract is here.
I think it would be a story, though.
That was what was driving the question. Trouba's contract is sort of up, and people are questioning, does he want to be here? Is he going to be here? And he's not on their lead promotion.
I'm more interested in what he says the first time he speaks with reporters at training camp.
I'm going to play this contract out. That's what he said last time, right?
Oh, that would kind of speak, like, with basically no matter what he says or how he says it, it's gonna, like, you can kind of glimpse into the mindset of what he's going through.
I don't read too much into that either, that he's not there. I just but maybe I'm reading too much into the Rise Together. Who knows? What are your thoughts on the Boss Pizza fan line? 780-1290. Clayton, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi guys. I'd like to touch on the Ryder supposedly delaying the game tactic.
Sure.
Yeah, first full disclosure, I am a Ryder fan.
Okay.
So I would like to just say I think it was actually a brilliant move of Jones taking a tactic, let's say, from the NHL and putting it into the CFL. Let me elaborate, because many times I'm a Jet fan also. When the team is sucking wind in front of the goalie, all of a sudden he needs an equipment adjustment or something like that. And it's an accepted tactic. As a Jet fan, I'm watching the game on TV, let's say, and I go, I understand what's going on, and so does all the other Jet fans, but you don't hear any complaining about that. What do you think about that?
That's a great point. And this has been done in football forever, since football began. I think it was just the number of times it happened that caught people or upset people.
Okay, and to me, just to be a little funny, I just think it's Bomber fans just trying to put another asterisk beside a Ryder victory, like they do with the Grey Cup, with Glenn with the broken arm.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's worthy, isn't it?
Well, I don't think so, because if you look back at that playoff run, I believe the Bombers got through the first round of the playoffs with no Anthony Calvillo playing for Montreal.
That's true. That's true.
Anything about that. Anyway, guys, thanks a lot. That was just my 2 cents.
No reason to bring that point up, fella.
And you're gone. Clayton's gone. Clayton's gone. Get out of here.
Just squeaked by that one in crazy conditions.
That.
Yeah.
Thanks, Clayton.
You okay over there?
I just broke my pen. I don't dislike the... I get... It's a tactic. It worked. It slowed it down. I don't know if there's every coach would do it, and I don't know if it's respectful to the game.
It's been done forever, though, just not to the degree that
college
Chris
football.
Jones
it's crazy. Like, college football has almost an epidemic. Like, when Oregon would run their offense, it would be seemingly every 5 plays.
Well, no one does it against the Packers. Like, Aaron Rodgers, 2 to 3 times.
They should.
1 to 2 to 3 times a game catches somebody trying to get off the field.
Well, then that's on that team. If you want to play the pride game where we're not going to resort to tactics like that, and you end up losing, you can be super prideful as you sit in the unemployment line looking for a job.
Yep.
Yeah, it's interesting to me.
It's pro sports, man.
Boss Pizza Fan Line 780-1290. Who's next?
Dave.
Dave, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. You have a good weekend?
Yeah, a very good weekend. What do you have for us?
I realize that we're in the depths of football season. It's all great. It's all exciting. You know, the hockey's coming up and, you know, Rise Together. I would have gone more with Search and Destroy myself, because that's exactly what the Jets are going to have to do this year. Like, how about beating Edmonton maybe once or twice this year? How about beating Anaheim, you know? They're going to have to beat the teams that they traditionally lose against. You know, I don't think we got to worry about Chicago or
I think St. Louis. I think Jets fans are more concerned about Jets beating a team like Vancouver or Colorado or Jersey. Right? Why Those not? Are the or, games that they crap down their legs, it seems.
Yeah, or Florida or whatever.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. But you know what? Can we turn the conversation to what's happening down in New York City and Queens and Flushing Meadows?
Sure.
How about what the Dennis the Menace Shop of Alof did this week? Wasn't that impressive?
It sure was fun to watch.
Yeah, we were asked, even touch on that. Like, is that good enough for him to get that far at this age? And you know, I think it is. But
of course it is. It's the deepest since Chang, right? The deepest anyone's gone at his age. Of course it is, man.
Hey, he was hoping to get to 150. He's now sitting at 51.
It's pretty darn cool.
Ranked in the world.
Yeah.
You know, he's pretty excited about that, but I think the kid's got his feet on the ground, and he said, every week's not going to be like this, and I got a lot of work. Like, he'll be the first to admit that he's got holes in his game that have to be worked on, you know? So I'm pretty excited about him. But how about the other stories? And I'll leave you with this bit for you guys to chew on for a bit, and I'll just listen. Is the possible, just the level of money fed corruption in the U.S. Open. The fact that these players are getting to play on Arthur Ashe. You know, I was reading an article in, I think it was out of The Guardian or something. Did you guys read that about why Arthur Ashe is the worst venue in the U.S.?
No,
I didn't read that.
It was pretty interesting. So basically, because it was designed with one thing in mind, and that was to print money hand over fist. You know, it's like it seats 22-5. If you're up in the nosebleeds, you're better to watch it on the 4K jumbotrons that they have going, because you can't even tell which way the ball is like which racket it's being hit off of up there. They allow people to move around, and this is why Nadal asked the umpire to quiet down the audience, and.
Lost him.
Do we just lose Dave?
Yeah.
He sounded like he was complaining about a lot of stuff there with regards to it. But, boy, it's the U.S. Open is, from a television perspective, it's always done fantastically, isn't it? And watching those games center court are just tremendous.
I don't really know of a facility that isn't built to try
to maximize revenue. No kidding. Yeah.
So, I'll have to read that article, Dave, and check it out. But I understand what you're saying. But I think that every major has its different atmosphere around it. And the U.S. Open has always been a little bit louder, a little bit more noisy. I had some buddies who took it in about third row 1 year, a couple of years ago. And they said those are the worst seats in the house to watch a ball going 158 kilometers an hour you're that close, because your neck gets sore. You actually might want to sit a little further back. But
almost every sport that exists is better on TV to watch, isn't it? I mean,
I'll take
the press box at Jets games as being the best place. You know, when you're up there and you watch everything develop, I love that seat is great. But if you want to see as much as you can, like having been at a PGA event, no, that's the worst thing in the world to go watch and all of a sudden that you can't see anything, you hear stuff, you don't have any clue what's going on. But by and large, to me, man, at home in the comfort of your living room, it's a tough sell to get me away from there for a sporting event.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think live sports is incomparable. Even when I went to the PGA Championship, I was a guy who watched the final day, maybe a couple of holes during the week, and it totally turned my perspective on golf. And I watch all 4 days of a major now simply because I spent 2 days following these guys live. It's unbelievable and totally changes your perspective on it.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. If you're, you know, maybe not a hardcore or just kind of a casual observer of whatever sport, but it's not even necessarily the live event that's changed over the years. It's just that TV coverage is so insane
superior,
now.
And
when when you watch NFL games, it is like a 3-hour theater performance with some of the replays and things they're able to get and the camera work and all the different shots they're able to show you. Maybe it's just football that makes me feel like that, but
I'd
be hard pressed to spend $200 or whatever it is to go to a football game than watch it at home for free and get every single replay and camera view possible.
When you're talking like the environment and the party is separate from watching the sport itself.
Yeah,
and I
like curling for sure.
I don't think you can top that.
And I like curling, but curling for sure. If you go watch it live, and the atmosphere is there too, and everything, but on TV you just get it's an angles game, and you get every single angle and shot on television that you don't get live.
It's darn near true for every single sport.
We'll take a break and take more of your calls on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290, when we come back to the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki, weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Jim Tilt, Troy Westward, Brandon Ruwicki with you right up until 10 a.m. today. And the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. I've just been told that Jacob Trouba was not in town for either one of the video promotional shoots that were included. And there were two different times they did it for the Rise Together. That's why he's not in the video. Nothing more, nothing less. Do not read too much into it.
It's good to hear.
Just not around. Also, I wanted to mention this before we get back to the Boss Pizza fan line. Winnipegger and former U of M Bison O-lineman Jeff Gray, who was drafted by the Green Bay Packers, was cut by the team, and the New York Jets picked him up, so he is on their practice roster. So Jeff Gray, trying to make the National Football League, cut by the Packers, who drafted him, or signed as a free agent, I believe, but did manage to hook up with the New York Jets, which, as we were talking earlier, he's got more than enough opportunity to make this team.
Yeah, that's $7,500 American a week on a practice roster in the NFL. So that's a great opportunity. And they're seeing a young guy who's green and they can mold and bring along. A fantastic opportunity for the young guy still.
Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. AJ, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. How are you?
Not the best. Can you see Mark Stewart sign with the Moose?
I did not see that.
Did you say?
He's asking, do you see it
happening? Oh, do I see it? That I don't know of. Like, to me, and we talked about this when he was bought out for probably 2 days in a row, it's really where Mark's at. Like, I know he's married now, a local girl. I don't know if, like, at this stage of his career, I guess you weigh all options.
I don't see him signing for the Moose.
I don't see him signing with the Moose. No, I think they have enough depth defensemen. I know that they have to find room for some. So, I don't think that's being offered to him. Personally, that's just my opinion. I don't know that for a case. Do you guys see him?
Oh, they wouldn't buy him out and then sign him for the Moose, right? That doesn't make sense.
I don't even know if you can do that.
Like I don't think you can sign with the same organization that bought you out that year.
Yeah, exactly. I don't even think it's an option for. I don't think he signs in the AHL. I don't know. I don't really see it. Just seems like a guy who, if he can't get an NHL deal, if you're happy in Winnipeg, maybe you just stay in Winnipeg and maybe you stay in shape. I don't know what Team USA is doing for the Olympics, but there's kind of a possibility there, perhaps.
Stop it.
What?
Stop it.
Why not?
Come on.
You wouldn't take
Mark. Are you serious?
There's no NHL defenseman going there. There's no NHL defenseman going there.
There's no NHL D-man going.
So you're talking about a guy that would be your play a leadership role in the team and be a third-pairing defenseman?
I'll tell you what's going to the Olympics. Speed. Stop it.
Well, Shane Doan's reportedly being asked to go. How fast is he?
Well, I tell you, I need speed on the back end more so even than up front.
Well, put him out there against Shane Doan. Let him fight it out.
I don't know. I'm just saying I don't know what kind of team they're going to have, and if their defensemen are all AHLers that aren't
in my
super talented.
Just stop it.
Just saying, man.
In my experience, guys like Mark Stewart, it's all on them. Like, if they love the game so much, some of them take an AHL contract, play for another 2 years. Some of them love the game so much, but only at a certain level. Some of them are at a point in their life where, although they are being offered some deals elsewhere, you know, it doesn't fit with where they are personally and what their future plans are. There's so many things around Mark Stewart. I just don't know, you know, what he's personally thinking, but
just not going to be here.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be here. That's a good point. TSN 1290 and the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. More of your calls next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290, or text us, 1290-90, with standard message rates applying. We're talking about the Labor Day Classic. We're talking about Mark Stewart. We're talking about the Rise Together. And we're talking about the faking of injuries from the Riders in order to slow down the cheetah offense of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Your thoughts on that and anything else you wish to weigh in on, 780-1290. Thanks to Chip, Clayton, Dave, and AJ so far who've weighed in on the conversations. You can also tweet us at Jim Toth Sports, at Troy Westwood, and at Brandon_Rewicki. Rob says, I'm a true Blue Bomber fan, but everyone knows the old saying, if you aren't cheating, you aren't trying.
Welcome to pro sports. You will push the boundaries and the rules as far as you can, stretch them as far as you can, and sometimes more than that to secure wins.
And like the caller said earlier, I mean, in the NHL, you see it all the time too. Paul Maurice will send out the wrong guy on a faceoff after an ice. They're on? He's on? Oh, okay, we'll make the change. Goalie fixes his skate conveniently. Player breaks his stick. It's all the same thing. And unless there's a rule in place, technically it's not even cheating. It really isn't. Because you're not breaking any rule.
Well, it's not cheating, but do you look at it more disrespectfully than you do a goalie fixing his skates so you can get a different guy on the ice?
It's in the exact same vein as that. It's the exact same.
Dom says Wade Miller did that all the time, go offside when he didn't like how they were set up. Yeah, Troy touched on that. Ronnie says the Jets are going to finish first in the Central. Book it.
Pass the Kool-Aid. I hope so. I hope you're right, Ronnie.
And a true fan at Loyal Pegger lets us know that Troop is not in the photo for Rise Together with a video, but they do have a Troop of Bobblehead night this year, which is the only one they have for bobbleheads this season.
And I asked him what jersey he's going to be wearing.
Oh, geez.
Joking! Just joking around!
That's pretty funny.
Our old friend Matt Robertson, Ice Matty 35, says the Rise Together is outdated and has been done to death already, and he also says Bombers O is putrid.
Bombers O is putrid? That's silly. And, yeah, the Rise Together, I mean, pick your snappy little marketing sort of phrase. There's a million of them out there. It's what every team does this.
And Troy wants the Parachute Club's Rise Up to be the goal song this year.
Oh, please.
Rise into the power.
That would be funny. We should play a little bit of that just to go along every time the Jets score with Rise Together, Parachute Club.
What do you think the goal song will be this year after bringing back, because of the Heritage Classic, a lot of the old was brought back this year. I don't think it'll be done this year, but last year was Jump by Van Halen.
Yeah, which I hate. Hated Jets 1.0. I just hate the song in general. I could understand.
You hate Jump?
Hate it. It's the most silly song lyrically. It's just void of any thought whatsoever, anything. I've always hated it. I don't really care what they do. I really did not like the when the players picked the song. What was it again?
Shout.
Shout, yeah, and like that whole thing, and I didn't like that at all. The Jets need to get a good goal song in place and let it take effect, take hold, and resonate with this fan base for years and years and years to come. It's up on them to find one. Let's hope they do it.
One exists. I'm just saying, it's out there. If you want to find it, it's there.
No. I wonder if they bring back the one previous to Jump.
Oh, sorry.
The one previous, no, that was too muddled, right? Like, I can't even remember the one that they had now, but it was they've had a couple at this point in time. This is interesting. One of the things on this organization, they need to find one that has sort of the same grab as a couple of other cities that have successful goal songs. And you know what, man? Do it and package it and present it in a way that the fans can latch onto it, utilizing something like the big screen. Like if there's a chant involved, if there's something involved for the fans to take part in, which there should be, whether it's a song or a certain chant that's attached to it, and utilize the big screen to teach everyone in the MTS Center so that place can basically explode every time the Jets score a goal.
Well, I think the place does explode when they score a goal, regardless of the song. Like, what do you have to teach them?
Just a little
have
extra
fun
oomph,
with
though.
The situation, JT. Similar to pick your city that does it right. The Jets.
Well,
Jets
like what
need
for example?
Huh?
Well, like what for example?
Well, are you kidding me? Like what we saw in Nashville, what you see in Chicago. There's a number of cities that have a goal song, and there's fan involvement with that goal song, and that's the Jets need to do that.
What am I missing? Like what? Like
I don't. What do you mean what?
What fan involvement on the big screen when a goal is scored?
I'm not saying the big screen, but I'm saying you can use that to teach the fan base the same. You know what exists in Nashville, and to me, the Jets and the fans in the MTS Center, there needs to be a wake up. Maybe instead of Rise Together, it could be Wake Up for inside the MTS Center. That place has gone to sleep, and I'm not a loud, boisterous fan, so I don't take part in it. So it's a little maybe hypocritical for me to bring this up because I'm a quiet enthusiast. But when I'm watching the game and people talk about it all the time, it used to be you sit up in that press area and you could feel the energy. Just it was unbelievable what was in that MTS Center. You look at years 1, 2, 3. It has diminished as each year has gone by. People here still like to say it's the loudest building. That's a lark. It's not even close. So it's time to, you know, maybe as this team rises and things, people get excited here, maybe that all comes back. But the change in the emotion in the MTS Center from year one to last year is remarkable.
I just don't play that much into a goal song. Like, I think when a goal is scored in a home barn, fans get excited. I mean, I like goal songs. I don't really care what they are or anything. But
I'd be cool with them. I think Vancouver did this, and I know some goals you're not going to be able to find out, but I'd be okay with each player picking their own goal song. I'd be down with that.
Like baseball coming up the plate. You know what I do enjoy is in Dallas or Nashville when they play with like what the game's going on. Like, so if there's a penalty and they play something like You Pay the Price, or I'm not throwing my idea again. I'm just saying like when they do, like what Dallas does in the score clock on Things to Hate Winnipeg and every Winnipeg guy, I think that's fun. I think that's engaging. I think a goal scored, fans get behind it on its own. But back to Bus Fan Line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Yeah, we'll get Frank and Martin to hang on, but let's go to Terry.
Terry, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I kind of put it on the Jet Twitter account last year, and I noticed they've been using this clip of the song in their advertising campaign. It's a classic. It's Paul McCartney and Wings, the song Jet. If you pay attention to the chorus, there's sort of a do-do-do-do-do-do-do Jet, you know, and if they just loop that, it's kind of similar to the Chelsea Dagger. It's simple. It's everyone kind of can connect with it, so I always thought that was just loop that thing a few times and folks will need to get into it and they can hit the word jet.
That's not a bad call, man. Get 15,000 screaming jet at the same time. That's a good call.
You know, the Chelsea Dagger has a, you know, they just, they don't,
don't put any words to it. It's like one word and let them shout to it. Switching sports to the football, my point on the injury, the fake injuries, it has to drive, you know, why O'Shea all week long practicing and instituting the cheat offense all for naught because of the nonsense that go on. So it's kind of, you know, when the Bombers, they were doing the cheat offense, they were very successful against all the teams. And it only became an issue when you have a coach with questionable ethics kind of do it. Like, never had this issue when they were doing the cheat offense against all the other teams. All of a sudden, he finds a kink to play. I know it's not part of the rules. I got full confidence in Randy Ambrosi, a former CFL player, will kind of maybe double the amount of time that a player can't play in again. But funny, it only comes to head against Saskatchewan. Did it against all other teams with success. So maybe some of those other coaches have a slightly higher, you know, ethical standard when it comes just to respecting the sport and the fans. It's all about the fans. And come on, you got to stop that garbage. But anyway, if anyone is listening in the Jets marketing department, I encourage you to go Twitter and get the Paul McCartney and the Wings, the Jets song, and clip that loop. And do it two or three times, and you got gold. Take care, gentlemen.
Thanks, Terry. Appreciate the call on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290.
You guys know the song he's talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good song. It's got a good little sing-along thing, and then they all say Jet. That would be kind of cool.
It's no Whoomp There It Is, but I'll accept.
It just depends on who you are, if you like the song and the genre. Like, I think it's too old, but I understand what it because it references Jets and stuff, but.
Yeah, just scream Jet. I think it would be awesome to have some sort of crowd involvement thing going on just to make it that much more sort of – because I think that'll – of course, like you're saying, Jim, everyone cheers, of course, when they score. But I'd like to see more of an effort be put in by the organization in getting the crowd going and more involved in the game really from start to finish as far as more similar to what's going on in Nashville. And Chris Jones, you know, and all the ethics questions and everything else everyone's putting – you know what they're looking at in Saskatchewan today is that 5-4 and the win.
Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Frank, you're on the program. Go ahead, sir. Hello, Frank. Frank the Tank has gone streaking. We'll go to Martin on the big show, TSN 1290. Martin, go ahead, sir.
You know I'm always here, guys.
There we go.
I haven't spoken to you in a while. For the Saskatchewan thing, come on, the only reason they're blowing it out of proportion is because it happened to us.
Yep.
That wasn't the only reason why we got beat. But with the Trouba thing, is this his last year on the contract?
Yes, and then he's an RFA controlled by the team for two more after this year.
Right. Have you guys heard
with
anything
arbitration
in the old rumor mill about how the talks are going or if they're even talking?
I have not heard if they've even talked contract or anything with Jacob Trouba this offseason.
Okay, well, yeah, I think the McCartney song would be good. It's even easy for old guys like me to remember.
The which, sorry?
McCartney
the
song.
Oh, the Wings, yeah, okay.
Yeah, or Wings. Okay, whatever.
Oh, McCartney
there you
Wings,
go.
Yeah.
I forgot it already.
Oh, sorry. No, okay, I messed it up, Martin. It's Paul McCartney Wings, and then it's – what's the name of it?
It's called Jet.
Jet. There we go.
Try and settle down your enthusiasm, okay, JT?
What you still don't latch on to my when you're going to the penalty box, the price by Twisted Sister, because that's the price you got to pay.
I've never heard the song, this classic you continue to reference.
I wouldn't call it a classic. But I do think it's a – that's what I mean, though, about regardless of the goal song. Fans are excited, whatever. I think a song can add to that for sure, but I think they're pumped anyway. I'd like to see as, like, things are going on and you go to other buildings and they play – like, so if there's a video review, they play the song Hello by Adele, and then yes. They go into Lionel Richie, Hello, because they're on the phone. Like, stuff like that,
that's
I think,
point,
are
what
entertaining.
What they do in Nashville,
yeah.
Right? Like, and they, it's Section 303, I believe it is. Right, that generates a bunch of the stuff, but it should be there should be some sort of an effort. I think in part of the game day of the Winnipeg Jets to nurture and bring this along. And my, what I was saying, Jim, is that you can utilize the scoreboard to get things going, to prompt some of this early on. I think it's a real important part to do to make the experience of going to the MTS Center that much better.
Back to Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290.
Let's squeeze Shannon in here.
Shannon, we'll get to you right before we go to break. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to know if you guys are satisfied with the Bombers kickoff game and if maybe a chance of getting Brandon Banks is available.
Oh, interesting. Thoughts on the kickoff game?
Well, Brandon Banks hasn't done a whole lot.
Are you talking kickoffs or kick returns?
Kick returns.
Okay, kick returns.
Doesn't Langford lead the CFL? Yeah.
I don't have a problem with it.
Coming into this week, Langford led the CFL in kickoff return average. Yeah. So
it seems like he's like one dimensional. Goes right to the right side, and that's it. I know he had one return back, but
well, he wouldn't be one dimensional there. That would be the play call, right? But hey, man, if you're leading the league average in kickoff returns and you got one return that's working well for you, then that would sort of make sense, no?
Oh, I guess. I don't know. You
would like to see some more points off it, is what you're saying.
Well, no,
and maybe field possession.
More field position off it, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it hasn't stuck out to me, but you could always get better. I mean, it would be nice to. I mean, what Finch is doing in Calgary is what you'd optimally want. I struggle to get that out, Shannon. But
coming into this week, he had only 15 returns and averaged merely a yard more than Langford. So, like, Langford's got 37 returns, and with the number, the minimum numbers here, leads the CFL. But you got guys with considerably less returns, Morris in Saskatchewan and Finch in Calgary. But I think Langford's been really solid at what he's doing out there.
Yeah, give me DBs. If we're making trades, bring in a couple of DBs over a return man for me.
Yeah, that'd be a long way down the list, right, for improvements you'd like to see made with the team.
And if he'd be available or not, I doubt it. I think Banks is one of the bright spots on a dismal season so far for the Tiger Cats, so I don't know why they would let him go.
He hasn't done much outside of yesterday. He hasn't done much this year.
Not even a return game?
No.
But the whole team hasn't. So, and doesn't Finch in Calgary have a couple TDs?
He had one called back yesterday, I know. Mm-hmm. Like a 95-yard yeah. Punt return TD.
Interesting, Shannon, yeah. You would like to see something done and something better on the return team for the Bombers. We'll take more of your calls and your texts at 780-1290 or 1290-90 with standard message rates applying when we return to The Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, TSN 1290. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and of course, give us a text at 1290-90. We didn't talk about this, Troy, but quick thought on the CFL players' PA, handshakes before the game in a show of, and a press release that came out immediately after, saying that we're unified in pushing forward the issues of player safety.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell come in a meeting before the game starts to shake hands. What the hell that really does to show that you're unified on this issue. Just goofy to me. Before a game, I don't want my pregame ritual thrown off by going across the field and taking part in something like that. Just be unified. You know, just cosmetic, strange, uncalled for.
Oh, really?
I think so. Like, be unified in it, and hey, you want to the PA has all the power in the world with player safety. You want something that doesn't exist that emphasizes player safety? Then have at her. What us coming to meet at center, at the midfield before the game? What the hell does that do? I don't understand it.
Boss Pizza Fan Line 780-1290. Mike, you're on The Big Show. Go ahead.
Yeah, morning, boys. That game, that Labor Day game, we were, I think, out-dirtied in that. We've talked enough about the fake injuries all over the place. But the one play that happened in the first quarter, just another example of being out-dirtied by the opposition. Saskatchewan jumped offside and pasted Nichols there's a five-yard penalty for doing that. But, geez, what a chance to get a nice free lick here on your quarterback, because he's going to let up when he hears a whistle, too. And they hit him pretty hard.
For 5 yards.
Yeah. Pardon me?
For 5 yards.
For 5 yards, yeah. Troy. You're right. 5 yards, and you get a free lick on the quarterback. Mm-hmm. Again, in my brain, in my mind, this was all preordained by their coach, and I can either just be sick to my stomach, which I kind of am, or I can applaud him for his dirty tactics. I got two other concerns about our football the last few weeks. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but our tackling has been horrendous, mm-hmm. and we've been trying to tackle guys around their head and around their shoulders. And sadly enough, it's our linebackers that are doing this. And I, you know, poor Sam Hurl's been had lots of stuff heaped on him. But I don't like do they not teach guys to tackle the waist anymore and you know wrap them up and throw them down? It was these head tackles and these upper body tackles which never work. And we look terrible doing that. So I think you know I'd be curious to know your thoughts on that. And then my last one, guys, is. You're coming into a game when you know you're playing a defense that rushes three and sends nine back, and you know there's no surprise there. They've done it all year. Why did we rush the ball so few times, and how did we have such little success and creativity moving the ball on first down? Because we were in second and long all game. So anyway, those are my comments, and I'd love to hear your feedback.
Thanks, Mike. You rush the ball because you're trailing. And early on, even in the first quarter, rush it less, but
yeah, but not to me, not in the first. When you're talking, even at halftime, when you're down the way you are in 34-16, there's a lot of time left there. And a fair point to make about Chris Jones' defense because he typically does not blitz a whole lot, right? So you are kind of knowing what you're getting there, but that. I think we have to come to a pretty good understanding of how good this defense is and can just kind of hope that Paul Apelis and Matt Nichols, along with Buck Pierce, can put something into play here that's going to be effective against a defense that has held combination of BC, Edmonton, and Winnipeg all three games to 63 points over the last three games. So it's a hefty order here. And I really like the point that you make about the tackling. I think and we've noticed this for sure. I was right there, and Chris Welby is talking about it as well. The Bombers, I think some of their mentality is hold up and strip the ball. Like the Bombers really have a takeaway type of mentality where sometimes you'll see the defense doing that as opposed to wrapping up and making sure you bring the player down. When it appears that they've got the player and they're going to make a tackle or stop the advancement of the ball, sort of the hold up, and that mentality, I think, can lead to some bad habits and poor tackling, and that's a valid point you make.
Ralph, do we have time? 30 seconds?
Yeah, really quick.
Ralph, we got 30 seconds, if you could be real quick. Hello? Gone?
Stick's really not quick. On the ice, man.
All right, get that stick on the ice. Is that the Ralph?
It was.
Oh, Ralph, next time. Interesting stuff today, and we appreciate it. As always, we'll be back tomorrow morning to do it all over again. Your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas, 12:15 with Kevin Hrushevsky on the Don Vito Roundtable, and 5:15 this afternoon with Hustler and Rick Ralph on the Afternoon Ride. On behalf of Troy Wesser, Brendan Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening, and The Big Show will be back tomorrow morning to do it all over again at 6 a.m. on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.